Back to politics, this side of the Atlantic. Remember this interview 3 years ago when Sir Keir Starmer was leader of the opposition? A siege is appropriate? Cutting off power? Cutting off water?
Sir Keir? Well, I think that Israel does have that right. It is an ongoing situation.
Prime Minister in waiting, Andy Burnham, directly addresses that interview and say Labour did not do enough. In other news, now vapes are to be sold in plain packaging to deter children, and the politician who left the floor of the Commons to the dance floor and won the hearts of the nation.
What we have got in this country is something that calls itself equality, but is in fact inequality.
Anne Widdecombe, speaking with LBC as recently last month as equality, has died. Age 78, will have an appreciation of a remarkable political career. Those stories and more after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, the former Minister, MP and MEP Anne Widdecombe has died at the age of 78. A long-time Conservative politician, she stood down from Parliament in 2010 as the Tories returned to government. She then re-entered politics nearly a decade later as a Brexit Party MEP, which later became Reform UK. She clashed intensely with members of the European Parliament several times, including during her maiden speech in 2019.
The British people expect the British government to end free movement and to do it in a way which is effective, not merely nominal. And the sooner that this Parliament wakes up to that, the sooner we will actually get the right sort of dialogue.
Andy Burnham appears set to become Labour's new leader without a contest. Mr Burnham says he's deeply grateful to the 322 Labour MPs who have so far nominated him to be the party's next leader. He's now only one short of the number of MPs needed to ensure that no one else can challenge him. Mr Burnham told LBC last week, bringing down the cost of living will be his focus.
What I would do, if successful, is lay out a plan for more public control over water, energy, transport, so that over the period we can get those bills down, fares down.
Labour has accused Reform UK of taking the public for fools amid further questions about the party's financial affairs. It follows reports that the Metropolitan Police has been investigating donations worth £500,000 for more than a year. Reform UK says the British people are tired of the establishment media doing anything they can to try to stop the party. Figures obtained by LBC show the government has spent more than £2 million on social media personalities and content creators since coming to power. The Cabinet Office commissioned influencers to promote campaigns, including free school breakfast clubs. The government says it has a duty to engage with the public and are continuously reviewing best value for taxpayers' money. There's more on this story on the LBC app. Vapes could soon start being sold in plain packaging under government plans to stop them being marketed to children. A 12-week consultation will consider whether the devices can only be sold in white, black or grey. UK-wide proposals could also introduce restrictions on flavour descriptions. And Arthur Ferry attempts to become just the fourth British player to reach the Wimbledon final in the Open era later. The wildcard takes on the French Open champion Alexander Zverev in the last four this afternoon. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,472. It closed down 16 yesterday. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.17. LBC weather, sunny and hot for most. Spells of rain in the north of Scotland. Some thundery downpours in the west later. A high of 35 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Vodafone is backing the UK with an £11 billion investment to make the nation's biggest network even better.
Fair play. That's a big commitment.
So you can launch that business.
So I can start selling my model trains in Pwllheli.
Multitask in a haze of glory.
I could stream Wimbledon whilst on a video call.
Start doing more of what you love from more places. Opportunity awaits. Switch to Vodafone today on the nation's network.
Nation's network means UK's biggest network through Vodafone 3 merger based on mobile sites versus major providers. Network improvements by 2034. See vodafone.co.uk/TNN. Subject to cover.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after seven on Friday, July the 10th. Another night, airstrikes between the United States, between Iran as well, and supposedly from a president who promised that he could bring about the end of the war. When reality bites, President Trump will take your views on that. Back here at home, fury at the leader of Restore, Britain political party Rupert Lowe. He was on the Joe Rogan Experience podcast.
As you probably know, they banned handguns.
The 90s, right?
In the late 90s, because there was a murder up in Dunblane.
One murder.
Yeah, he was given every chance to row back there. One murder. There were actually 16 children lost their life, plus a teacher. Why can he not stand down? Why no social media apology? Staying with the idea of government action, vapes are to be sold in plain packaging to make them less appealing to children. We're going to be hearing from the Health Secretary, James Murray, later in this hour. But LBC's reporter, George Icke, has put a previous promise from the government, a previous clampdown, to the test.
I don't want one that I have to charge up. No, just one that I can just use and throw in the bin. Can I get a cola ice crystal then, please? That's just throw away, isn't it, when it's done?
Yeah.
Buying a disposable vape with ease despite the pledge that they would be banned. That pledge from last year. Staying with health matters, with the heat wave, which unfortunately is going to continue, already operations are being delayed. What is the impact for the NHS? I repeat, the Health Secretary will join us more on that. Andy Burnham apologising for that interview that I did with Sir Keir Starmer. He was leader of the opposition, of course, in the early days of the Middle East conflict, saying that him then, Labour didn't get it right, they should have done more. We'll look at that. And farewell to the girl from the valleys who became the queen of the power ballad.
It's a heartache, nothing but a heartache.
What a voice. Bonnie Tyler has died, as you probably have heard more recently, sadly, just within the last hour news, that Anne Widdecombe, the MP who left the Commons floor for the dance floor. I'm afraid she's died as well, in appreciation of those two careers.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Let's go back not that far in time to that promise that we heard from President Trump when he addressed his supporters, claiming to have ended a number of wars since becoming president.
Iran was to believe the Middle East, they're not to believe anymore. With the help of everyone here today, this has been by far the most successful first year of any administration in the history of our country, acknowledged by everybody. To begin with, I ended 8 wars. And it may be a little early to say this, but if we add Iran and Lebanon, that will be 10 wars ended and many, many millions of lives saved. Think of how many lives we've saved.
Do you suppose even he believes it? This, of course, now is the U.S. in a round of traded strikes for a second night. Observers reporting a dramatic drop in the number of ships travelling through the Strait of Hormuz. Let's go straight to the region now. Sally Lockwood, journalism broadcaster based in Dubai, joins us again. Sally, good morning. What's the latest?
Hello, Nick. Well, there have been reports of a third night of explosions in Iran, centred around the south of the country, but also in the southwestern city of Bushehr, where Iran's main nuclear power plant is. Apparently there have been more explosions there, according to Iranian state media. But curiously, Nick, Washington hasn't confirmed that they are behind this third night of strikes. In fact, a US official speaking to multiple media outlets overnight said that they weren't planning a third night of attacks. So at the moment, it's not quite clear what's going on, because US Central Command came out very quickly on Tuesday night, then Wednesday night, confirming that they'd attacked 180 targets in Iran over a 48-hour period, but no confirmation from US Central Command this morning.
I know it's desperately difficult in the fog of war, Sally, but do we know what triggered this latest escalation?
Well, we do. Tuesday, 3 vessels in and around the Strait of Hormuz were attacked by Iran. One was a Qatari LNG vessel, which was hit by a missile, reportedly, as well as a Saudi tanker carrying crude oil. And this is what triggered the attacks on Tuesday night by the US. And then, we saw Iran retaliate the same the following night. And then, obviously, another night of attacks that we're still trying to get some clarity on last night. But what we're seeing is, even though this memorandum of understanding was signed, you know, last month, laying out framework for how they were going to reach some sort of a peace deal and how the 60-day negotiating period was going to go, one of the main clauses in that memorandum of understanding was that the Strait of Hormuz would reopen for the free flow of energy exports from the Gulf. And what we're seeing, I think, is Iran not willing to relinquish their control over the Strait of Hormuz. Because according to Iranian state media, those vessels were targeted by Iran because they didn't respond to Iranian warnings to not pass the Strait of Hormuz through the approved corridor, which is to the northern part of the Strait of Hormuz. Now, bear with me here. It's a very narrow waterway, Iranian soil to the north, Omani territory to the south, and no one is currently traveling through the normal highway in the center of the Strait of Hormuz because it's laid with mines. So there's an Iranian-approved route, which some vessels have been taking, which essentially hugs the Iranian coastline. And then there's an American route, which is to the south and goes along the Omani coastline. Now, it seems that Iranians are not happy about this. I spoke to a shipping contact here this week who said to me that the US corridor was actually making a real difference and that vessels were turning off their transponders and were able to pass the Strait of Hormuz safely using that corridor along the Omani coastline, and that it made a difference. But it was far from business as usual.
Sally, I will leave it there. Sally Lockwood, thank you. You're a journalist and broadcaster. You're joining us from Dubai. Your line has actually dropped, and I was going to thank you anyway and move on. So, Sally, if you can hear us, thank you. I fear we'll be talking again soon. Let's bring to the conversation at 10 after 7. Matt Fry is one of my LBC colleagues, of course. Tomorrow, Saturdays from 10 in the morning, and, of course, presenter and anchor for Channel 4 News. Matt, many people are saying now the President Trump has been reduced to little more than a commentator, than effectively a spectator on these affairs. How accurate is that in your summation? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, it's sort of accurate. I mean, the trouble is that he's obviously also the commander in chief, and he's able to push the button on any number of airstrikes, which is what happened in the last two nights in retaliation to what the Iranians did to those ships in the Strait of Hormuz. But as he delivers actions, he keeps delivering commentary. He's incontinent with commentary, which is not very helpful, especially when a lot of that commentary is either incredibly insulting. I mean, to call a civilization, a country, scum, and the devil, while they're burying the supreme leader that you have killed in an airstrike a few months ago, is not a very good idea, especially when it's a proud civilization. Whatever you make of the regime in Tehran, the Iranians are a proud people. And to then boast that this is the best operation ever and you've brought about peace in 8 countries, I mean, all this stuff is just, it's not even commentary, it's popcorn. It's crunchy and it's full of air, and then it disappears. And what I find absolutely baffling, and I've said this, I think, to you many times, is that there is no designated adult around Donald Trump in the cabinet room or in the Oval Office who can say, with all respect, sir, put the phone away, as you might do to a teenage kid who's spending too much time on it, because this doesn't help him. And the other thing which Sally referred to just now, and this is really quite important, I mean, it's possible that the Americans and the Iranians carry on this sort of weird ballistic dance for the next few months with an on-again, off-again ceasefire. But if the Israelis, who never liked the idea of this war suddenly ceasing and only being about the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz, if the Israelis have now got involved, which is possible, then we're into a slightly different and more dangerous ballgame.
What do you imagine will be the reaction as the world watches on to the fact that Trump is so desperately out of control? And what are people saying at home, his voter base in the U.S.?
The voter base in the U.S. does not like this war. It has never liked this war. It is probably also really bored of this war. And unless the oil price goes up exponentially, which at the moment it doesn't seem to be, because I think the oil markets have calculated that they can live with a certain degree of disruption in the Strait of Hormuz. But unless things get really, really bad, then Trump can just carry on again, off again, as I said before, claiming that there was, some incredible victories and this is the best thing the world has ever seen. But that's not necessarily the case. I mean, wars have a habit of slipping out of control. And so if we're back to where we were in March with the Israelis getting involved, with Gulf countries getting hit, I mean, this is also important. The Jordan was hit yesterday by the Iranians. Qatar was hit again, UAE and so on. I mean, these countries are all much better prepared now for an Iranian backlash. But it still deeply unsettles the region at a time when everyone was crossing their fingers and chewing their nails at the same time, hoping that this thing would be over.
Matt Fry, always enjoy speaking to you. Matt, thank you. You can catch Matt Fry at LBC, of course, Saturday mornings from 10. He's anchor for Channel 4 News as well, 13 after 7. Listen to that, Dr. Laura Smith, who's a presidential historian at the University of Oxford. And if I can, Doctor, lean on your history of US presidents. There's no shortage of them getting involved in seemingly unnecessary at times foreign wars. Afghanistan, Vietnam. Are we looking at another one? Good morning.
Good morning. No, I mean, this is fascinating in the sense that presidents sometimes like to, they like crises, interestingly enough. I mean, think of Teddy Roosevelt, for example. He always yearned for a crisis. Just had a presidential library opened in North Dakota, right? Except when you have someone like Trump who thinks that they can control a crisis, and yet in one of the most uncontrollable regions in the world, the Middle East, that you so rightly point out that modern history should clearly indicate Donald Trump never had control. There was never going to be any indication that even though he created this crisis, something that he never had any clear aims at, that he was ever going to be able to control it.
What does history tell us about what we might witness over the coming months, Doctor?
Oh, well, I mean, it's fascinating because if we think about how America has just gone through its 250th anniversary, if we look back at its previous one, right, look back at 1976, an election year, Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter is renowned as having been more successful as a post-president than as a single-term president, right? But his presidency was marred, interestingly enough, by obviously very poor relations in the Middle East and specifically Iran, but under very different context. The Iranian Revolution 1979, the Iranian hostage crisis, things that were completely out of his control. And the fact that America was weakened on the global stage, partly by obviously the post-war Watergate and the Vietnam era, but things that were very much out of his control and not of his own making.
I will leave it there, Doctor. Thank you, Laura Smith. We will talk again. You're a presidential historian at the University of Oxford. Thank you for your input. The promise to end all the wars, this seemingly never-ending, your take on Trump. We'll come back to that. Here in the UK, a senior politician of a sort, the leader of Restore Britain, Rupert Lowe, speaking on the Joe Rogan Experience podcast.
As you probably know, they banned handguns
the 90s, right?
In the late 90s, because there was a murder up in Dunblane.
One murder.
No, there weren't. There were 16 children and a teacher lost their lives. Ignorant and also unrepentant. Hours to put that right. Still, reportedly, nothing. Plus, the politician who left the floor of the Commons to the dance floor and, for many, won the heart of the nation.
I'm a bit disappointed. I thought we had another week in us. I think there was always a doubt as to whether we were going to get to the finals, but we'd have gone for it if we could. I've had a great time.
And that's Anne Widdecombe when she was eliminated from Strictly Come Dancing in 2010. She has died. It was unveiled early this morning in appreciation of her career. After this, 7:16 LBC News Headlines, Dominic Ellis.
The former minister, MP and MEP, Anne Widdecombe, has died aged 78. Andy Burnham looks set to be the next Prime Minister after 322 Labour MPs backed him in the party's leadership contest. And Labour's accused Reform UK of taking the public for fools amid further questions about the party's financial affairs. LBC weather, sunny and hot for most, spells a rain for the north of Scotland, a high of 35 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M25 clockwise to Junction 5 at the M26, just after the junction. Emergency works are taking place, only one lane is open, and those delays now have over an hour from before Junction 4 at Orpington, and also delays back onto the M26 for around 3 miles. Also on the M25, there are long delays on the western stretch anti-clockwise from Junction 16 at the M40 to 14 at Heathrow, and that's where a car has broken down. In Enfield Town, Cecil Road, which is part of the one-way system, is blocked. It's because a lorry has broken down and that's causing queues. On the underground, there's no service on the Piccadilly line between Rayners Lane and Uxbridge and also between the Heathrow terminals.
This is LBC.
Okay, Nico, got some traffic up ahead, so let's box, box, box into BP to fuel up and grab a coffee.
Even F1 drivers like Nico Hülkenberg do everyday driving. That's why the Audi Revolut F1 team recommends BP Ultimate with active technology.
Grab us a sausage roll while you're in there. Nico? Hello?
Choose BP Ultimate for up to 375 more miles per year. Distance may vary due to factors like driving style, vehicle load and weather. Based on continuous 6,400 miles per year use. See bp.com/ultimate.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Want a simple way to earn a fixed monthly income? At ULEZ Prosperity, you buy a ULEZ compliant vehicle from us, rent it back to us for a fixed monthly income, and at the end of the term, we buy it back from you at a fixed agreed price. We manage the vehicle, driver and operations. You simply receive the monthly income. Buy, rent, sell. It's that simple. Get conditions at ulezprosperity.com. Earn a steady monthly income at ulezprosperity.com.
Here's a tale of two commuters. Steve was in a rush and needed to park near the station. Jane also needed a space and booked in advance with Your Parking Space. Steve had a meeting at 9 and panic at 8. Nowhere to park. Jane, she's already in the office and enjoying that morning latte. With Your Parking Space, you can browse thousands of spaces across London and reserve one instantly. Use the code GET10 for £10 off your first booking. Download the Your Parking Space app today.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had two kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
20 after 7, I'll use the expression again, reality bites for US President Donald Trump. The claims to have ended up to 10 wars or conflagrations. Well, utter nonsense, as unfortunately gets worse in the Middle East. Quick look at some of the front pages. I won't, because there's a very wide range. The story the Daily Mirror has, we're going to do more detail in just a moment. They have a single word headline, ignorant. This is the Restore Britain leader, Rupert Lowe, sparking fury, says the paper, downplaying the Dunblane massacre as one murder. It wasn't, of course. These horrific events in 1996 actually led to the deaths of 16 innocent children and a teacher. More on that with our Scotland political editor in just a moment. The Daily Mail, the story is in all the papers, but they are exercised by the fact of the shameless stitch-up that sees Andy Burnham virtually over the threshold as being the next Prime Minister. Mr. Burnham also features on the Guardian front page. He's referencing the interview I did with Sir Keir Starmer as leader of the opposition, do you remember, 3 years ago, and saying that he, Sir Keir's initial and Labour's initial response to Israel's military action in Gaza, they didn't get it right. That was when I asked, is it OK to switch off water and other supplies? So that interview's still bouncing around 3 years on. Health for the front page of the Eye. UK's 1.6 million weight loss jab users must start strength training, something we'll put to Health Secretary James Murray, who joins us later in the hour. Lastly, let's finish with the Daily Express. Kemi Badenoch saying, only Tories have serious policies. This is, of course, the continuing drumbeat over the concern for many, not all, for many, but not all, that this is effectively a coronation of the next Prime Minister. Go to the LBC app for the latest in the reform row. Police investigating a £500,000 cash given to reform by the convicted fraudster's mother. This is so-called gorgeous George Cottrell, his mum, reportedly giving £500,000. That's now being looked at by the relevant authorities. And the Daily Mirror celebrates Prince Charles. I'm so sorry, Prince Charles, how old am I? King Charles and Queen Camilla going to the penguin enclosure for the London Zoo and seeming to revel in the sunshine. King Charles there by the pool with the penguins. Alrighty, let's get to calls in concerning President Trump. Lenny in Ashford. There is no measure, or as they say, metric for this, but how big an error do you think Trump has made here? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, he made a very big error, and it was all because of his lack of preparation.
What would additional preparation have brought about?
Very simple, Nick. In NATO, there is a unit called SHAPE.
Right.
And they keep an eye on all the hot spots throughout the world, so that if there is going to be a war or any uprising, then SHAPE have a plan how to resolve it and what you need to resolve it. Now, you cannot...
But he won't listen to anyone, Lenny.
I know, but this is what... you're confirming what I'm saying. His lack of... It's totally Trump's fault for the situation we are in.
But don't you think he was effectively persuaded into it, cajoled into it by Israel? Isn't that the reality? So I'm not familiar with exactly how this SHAPE unit works, but nothing would have prevented that. No SHAPE interference could have prevented that, could it, Lenny?
Yes, it could.
How?
Because with SHAPE, I have been there. There's not
Sorry,
many
when
people...
you say you have been there, where have you been?
It's in Belgium.
You mean you've been to the offices? You've been to the offices of NATO?
Yes.
Right. And what did you learn there?
And I learned that what they exist for, and what they do, they take all. They, like at the time I was there,
They're Sorry, when you said, were you working there or were you visiting?
No. I'm not gonna tell you why I was there. But what it was, when I was there, their biggest fear at that time was South Africa.
Right.
Because of they was expecting a big uprising in South Africa.
Were you working for a company associated
No, I'm not going to tell you, Nick. You're wasting your time.
Had you gone on a day trip?
No, I'm not asking.
I'm not asking for your rank, name, rank, and serial number. I've got to. When you have, and it's really interesting what you're saying, but you've got to put yourself for a moment, if you would, sir, in my position. In my listeners are thinking, well, how does this bloke actually know? And again, I don't want you to give away the name of the person. Just give me a sense of how you knew this. I owe that to all the other listeners, Lenny.
I would tell you, over 3 years, I spent 6 days there.
Okay,
now, that is what it wasn't just a day trip
All
or
right.
nothing.
Okay. Well, right? There's a little more flesh on the bone. Thank you, sir. Go ahead.
No, right. Now, what it is, and what SHAPE do, if you look it up, and like I repeat myself.
It's the Supreme Headquarters Allied Powers in Europe, the Central Military Headquarters of NATO Allied Command Operations.
That is correct.
Right, yes. Yeah, so someone called John has very kindly just said
And if Trump would have just gone to them, because you cannot bomb an ideology. You won't beat an ideology with bombs.
Well, I absolutely agree with you on that one. Lenny, lastly, before we move on, and I do mean this importantly, because you've always kept an eye on the channel for us, the weather and the tides, are we likely to see more people coming over? Because you quite rightly...
It's like a mill pond, and they're flowing like... No, there's no obstructions in their way at all.
So the dinghies
are... government, I'd say, Burnham's going to be there with his welcome.
All right.
And we're in trouble, mate.
All right, sir. Thank you. Lenny, I hear what you say. Thanks for your experience of working with or alongside or outside of SHAPE, but I just finished by saying I think you're asking a lot to think that Trump would have even listened had he contacted them. But I'm grateful for your input, and as ever, you are our channel watcher. Thank you for that one. Probably more to come as this weather is extraordinary and set to continue, I think, through today. Let's get to other matters, and I mentioned that front page headline, Ignorant, Restore Britain leader Rupert Lowe, sparking fury by downplaying the Dunblane massacre as one murder. Should we listen again to what he said on the Joe Rogan podcast? Because it excited a lot of anger. He's a right-wing MP. He was referencing the 1996 school shooting. 16. I remember I was working at that time. If you're in journalism at that time, it's a story you'll never forget. 16 innocent children lost their lives. A teacher died. Lowe was talking about US gun laws on this US podcast. Here's a little of what he said.
As you probably know, they banned handguns.
The 90s, right?
In the late 90s, because there was a murder up in Dunblane.
One murder.
So everybody, my father used to shoot pistols for Oxford University, and he's dead now, bless him, but he had, all his pistols were taken away. The pistols he used to shoot with at Oxford University.
We all make mistakes. I do it on a regular basis. And if you've listened to me any time, you know I seek to put those mistakes wrong as quickly as I can and apologize and say, I got it completely wrong. This oaf has had hours, and yet the fury continues to grow, not least, of course, in the region of Dunblane. Gina Davison is LBC Scotland political editor and joins us in more details. Gina, good morning.
Morning, Nick. Yes, some of the adjectives that have been used by those I've spoken to in Dunblane about Rupert Lowe and those comments are basically unbroadcastable. But others include selfish, ignorant, callous and offensive. He has sparked, as you say, absolute fury with those remarks on the Joe Rogan podcast, a podcast of which, of course, is listened to by millions upon millions of people in America. And that anger has only increased as there has been no apology from Rupert Lowe. And this idea of the 16 children and their teacher killed 30 years ago, reduced to just one murder, and an apparent focus on how their deaths were as nothing compared to his dad losing his shooting pistols. Well, Jack Crozier, whose sister Emma was killed, was particularly scathing about that. When I spoke to him, Nick, he pointed out that while Rupert Lowe's dad had to give up his guns, his father had, of course, lost his daughter. And Kenny Ross, whose 5-year-old daughter Joanna was also killed, he told me that Mr. Lowe was ignorant and he was selfish and that he had no understanding of what had happened that terrible day, but that the UK was a far safer place because of the campaigning done by the parents of those who had lost their children after that. And there was also some political unity in response to those remarks. Labour's Chris Kane, the MP for the area, he raised the issue in the Commons, while Tory MSP Stephen Kerr and SNP MSP Keith Brown, who both represent that part of Scotland, they also condemned Rupert Lowe's comments. We can hear what they all said.
To describe the Dunblane tragedy as one murder diminishes what happened to 16 children and their teachers, and the suffering of everyone whose lives were changed forever in March 1996.
For people across Scotland who remember that terrible day, hearing it reduced so casually to one murder is genuinely shocking.
These comments from Rupert Lowe are an absolute disgrace. What he should be doing is paying testimony to the drive, determination and courage of those parents who campaigned for the banning of handguns in this country. He should apologise for these remarks forthwith.
So demands for an apology, Nick, but we haven't got one. Rupert Lowe spent yesterday on X tweeting about the interview, but ignoring that particular aspect of it. There was, however, a statement from his party, Restore Britain, which said just that he had been referring to one incident.
LBC Scotland political editor Gina Davidson reporting, this is what you're saying about that. Dan says, I listened to the podcast, I think he meant one incident and it was a slip of the tongue. He probably did, Dan, but just apologise. Andrew, I feel sad another high-profile politician who claims to be a patriot goes overseas and bad-mouthing Britain. Frankly, I thought Mr. Lowe would know better. Stephen, what's your last name? Stephen Basingstoke. The Rupert Lowe comment, he's confusing Dunblane with the Hungerford massacre. Handguns were banned after the Hungerford incident. But you're correct, he should have come straight away, come back and corrected his comments at the very least. Yes, I think this is a new low for Rupert Lowe. In other news, farewell to one former front page politician.
What do you say to consumers who can't afford to pay even for some of the basics if they've gone up the way that cheese sandwich has with all its ingredients?
Well, then you don't do the cheese sandwich.
That's Anne Widdecombe speaking to the then BBC's Jo Coburn back in May 2023. She, Anne Widdecombe, has died aged 78. And from the Welsh Valleys to the Queen of the Power Ballad. Farewell to Bonnie Tyler, but when I was with The Sun all those decades ago and I interviewed Bonnie Tyler, what did she tell me about her career? I'll share that story with you in the next hour. It's 7.31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. The news is with Dominic Ellis.
The former minister, MEP and MP, Anne Widdecombe, has died at the age of 78. A long-time Conservative politician, she most recently served as Reform UK's Justice and Immigration Advisor. Andy Burnham looks set to be the next Prime Minister after 322 Labour MPs backed him in the party's leadership contest. He's now only one short of the number needed to ensure that no one else can challenge him. And Labour has accused Reform UK of taking the public for fools amid further questions about the party's financial affairs. It follows reports that the Metropolitan Police has been investigating donations worth £500,000 for more than a year. LBC weather, sunny and hot for most, some spells of rain for the north of Scotland, thundery downpours in the west, later a high of 35 degrees.
LBC.
London, the app for black cabs is here. Jump. Get about with drivers who have the world-famous knowledge and know every street in London. And unlike other black cab apps, you'll only pay the meter fare. No booking fees, no surge fees, no it's raining fees, no there's a game on fees, no fees ever. Just tap the app to hail your black cab. Jump, the app for the cabs that make London, London. Download Jump today.
When you're smiling,
don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling and the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
A spectacle far beyond.
beyond your imagination. Be amazed. Be moved. Be there. For an experience that will stay with you forever. Disney's The Lion King at London's Lyceum Theatre. Book now at thelionking.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:34, more of your calls come in. Mark, I think you're going to take us a conversation about Rupert Lowe, and I look forward to speaking with you about that. But we'll talk business now with Kathleen Brooks, who's financial analyst and research director at the trading platform XTB. And we have a new prime minister on the way, and I think he's just one vote shy of what he needs, Andy Burnham, to cross the threshold. No shortage of tasks and challenges for him, but one is in the world of business and business confidence. Kathleen, walk us through that, if you would. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, I mean, here we go again, really. There's been a really sharp decline in business sentiment in the last few weeks. It plunged to its lowest level for 18 months. And companies are really worrying now that Andy Burnham will launch a fresh tax raid. You know, rising labour costs, they've got weak consumer demand. And then there's this fear that Andy Burnham's grand plans for privatisation, there's obviously a massive welfare bill to pay as well, which he said he won't cut, that all of that will end up being paid in exactly the same way that Rachel Reeves tried to plug the hole through business taxes, because he's already committed to not increasing VAT, income tax and national insurance.
What would he need to do to calm the nervous men and women in the city? A couple, or just maybe just one standout policy that would have people think, okay, actually, he has got our backs here.
Well, I think a standout policy, well, firstly, what he could do actually is announce who the Chancellor is, because that will depend on what the policies are and which direction we're going in. So I think it would be, I think the standout policy would very much be to keep tax where it is, because it's complicated enough already, Nick, and to really talk about cutting spending where he can and actually have a reasonable spending plan instead of just these constant tax rises, because that makes it so hard for businesses. And the bedrock of our economy is small businesses. The service sector is actually where we saw the biggest plunge in confidence. That's 80% of our economy.
You've mentioned tax on a couple of occasions. Let's go into a conversation about tax, taxation and tax investigations. What are we learning about those, Kathleen?
Yeah, well, they're taking a really long time, 8 years on average. Only for some, though, that would be for some of the largest tax fraud cases or suspected tax fraud cases, I should say. But, I mean, look, if you've ever tried to call HMRC, you never get through to anybody. I mean, you go around in circles and circles. So it's unsurprising that these investigations take longer. But one thing where they don't take so much longer, actually, is inheritance tax. So they have increased the number of investigations in inheritance tax. They rose 5,000 bereaved families essentially last year. That was a 6-year high. There's a surge in VAT investigations. There's so much focus on investigations. They're expanding their scope every single week, it seems like, but they can't actually keep up. So those people who are committing the real fraud are actually able to work the system and potentially not have to deal with the consequences for up to 8 years. Now, that is quite rare, and they are the most complex cases, sometimes involving fraud, sometimes not. But it does suggest that HMRC, I think people are just, it's another institution in the UK that is struggling with its credibility, shall we say.
Well, for the final story before the weekend, and a big weekend as well of sport and everything, but let's try and lift the mood in the world of music and an £11 billion boost to the economy in part down to acts such as... You a Dua Lipa fan, Kathleen?
I quite like her music. I didn't go and see her, but I know many did. So it's not just Dua Lipa, it's Oasis, it's Coldplay.
No, I was there for that. That was a stunning night out, the Coldplay night. That was brilliant.
Yeah, they do it. They put on a really, really good show. Yeah. And the lighting and everything is amazing. But UK concerts, you weren't the only one. It was a record audiences last year. So, it was, I think, 24.7 million people attended gigs in the UK last year. That was up nearly 5% on 2024. Obviously, Oasis was huge. Coldplay was huge. Dua Lipa. We had the year before that. It was Taylor Swift. Beyonce was here last year as well. And that added an £11 billion boost to the economy. And it also included an extra 2.1 million tourists. So people are now traveling traveling to the UK to watch live music, which is a fairly new phenomenon actually. But fans are spending a lot more. There's long lines for maybe at your Coldplay concert, you might have noticed, Nick, long lines for people to buy merch. Maybe you bought some yourself. And over $5 billion was spent on tickets, travel and drinks at the venue. Maybe you participated in that as well.
I might have bought Mrs. Ferrari a t-shirt. I can't remember now, but it's very highly liked. I'm not going to deny it.
And another $5 billion essentially spent on the production of staging, security, all of that kind of thing. So they cost a fortune, but they do pay off. And it's essentially, it's global pop stars that are delivering growth for this country. It's not the government, Nick.
Thanks for that, Kathleen. Well, maybe we should look as Chris Martin coming here as Chancellor or Dua Lipa as the Chancellor. Kathleen Brooks, your financial analyst and research director at the trading platform XTB. 7:39. Mark, I do want to talk to you about Rupert Lowe, but we have an opportunity now to speak to a senior politician about the untimely passing of another senior politician. We have to say farewell to...
If I needed any convincing at all that the best thing for Britain is to leave here as soon as possible, it was the way that those elections were conducted yesterday. Because if that is this place's idea of democracy...
Big Brother is a complete brute.
Brilliant.
And he will not let us share our teeth.
Do you say to consumers who can't afford to pay even for some of the basic...
Well, then you don't do the cheese sandwich.
We can now reveal the couple leaving Strictly Come Dancing tonight. Tonight is Anne and Anton.
Anne and Anton, the journalist you heard asking about a cheese sandwich, of course, Joe Coburn, who was then with the BBC on that show. Anne Widdecombe, who was a Conservative MP between 1987 and 2010. She was the MP for Maidstone, later Maidstone and the Weald, as in the Weald of Kent, and held several ministerial positions in Sir John Major's government. Let's bring to the conversation Nadine Dorries, who was, of course, Culture Secretary and worked alongside Anne. Sad day today. Nadine, how will you remember the great lady? Good morning.
Oh, gosh, good morning. It is a sad day. It was very sad news to wake up to. You know, Anne was such a formidable lady. I worked with her in Parliament. And, you know, I know she was on Strictly, Big Brother, and all the things that the public loved her for and got to know her well for. But, you know, she was the one thing I would say that maybe gets overlooked is what a formidable parliamentarian she was. Anne gave barnstorming speeches. When she stood in the Commons to speak, everybody listened. She was a doughty campaigner on some of the most serious issues of the day. And I'm sad to say, was very badly treated by the Conservative Party hierarchy.
In what way, Nadine?
You know, I don't think it's a secret that everybody expected Anne to automatically, after 23 years service, after 20 plus years service, after working as a minister, after being a shadow cabinet posts, the role she carried within the Conservative Party, it's not a secret that everyone expected her to be automatically put into the House of Lords, and she wasn't. And I think that, and those who were in her intake, those who worked alongside her, other women, who hadn't achieved anything like Anne had, automatically were. And I think that's, you know, that's kind of like the spoken thing in Westminster. You know, why wasn't Anne put in the House of Lords? It was constant. And I think it's, but you know, she would never have complained. Anne just got on with things. She just powered through. She would never complain.
Let me ask you this. She cut a rather severe figure, Nadine. Was there a sense of humour with her?
Oh my gosh, are you serious? She didn't cut a severe figure on Strictly. You know, I found her the kindest. She could quote Burke, Erskine May, Scruton at you to any question. She was a formidable intellect. You know, she last told me off 2 days ago. So you're right, she is formidable. It was just a few
days
ago.
What did you get wrong? What were you told off by from Auntie Anne?
No, I'm not going to discuss that.
Oh, you're not?
I did get told off. We have a WhatsApp group with some of us on, and I said something she immediately passed, and she took no prisoners, sadly. But she was just stunning. an incredibly intelligent and funny woman. And I jokingly, for the 5 years I served her in Westminster, and not just myself, a few others as well, those new MPs at the time, jokingly referred to her as Auntie Anne. Because if you had any question about anything, not only did Anne know the answer, Anne would lead the way. And if I've got time to say so, you know, as a new MP, I was passing quite a serious piece of legislation on the reduction of the upper limit at which abortion could take place. And Anne whispered in my ear, "You, my dear, need to go and stand at the side of the speaker's chair right now, because if you get your amendment in first before anybody else, it will be called." And so I looked at her and I said, "Are you serious?" She went, "Go and stand there now." And so I literally walked over and stood at the side of the speaker's chair, having no idea what I was doing. And then the speaker leaned down, took my amendment off me and read it. And that was it. And then I realized there were other more experienced MPs than me jostling behind me, realizing what I was doing, trying to get in front. And she was just, she would do that to a new MP. She would help you. So
I will leave it there, Nadine. Thank you. Nadine Dorries, paying tribute to Anne Widdecombe, who's died aged 78. Nadine, of course, former Culture Secretary with the Conservative Party. 744. Mark's in Egham. Let's talk about a politician of a different party. Restores Rupert Lowe. This is about as low as you get, isn't it, Mark? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. I don't know what he's saying, really. I don't think it's intentional, but I think,
he's had long enough to put it right, Mark.
Yeah. He's been quiet, I must say. But I think, as you say, you know, if it's a slip and it's an accident, maybe potentially he could have meant, you know, a massacre over a murder, one massacre instead of a murder.
But why not put it right, Paul? Everyone makes mistakes. Everyone.
Of course, how you
react to that mistake that counts. And he's had hours now to put this right. It's a brutal, ugly arrogance that he won't put this right. That's the reality, Mark.
Is there a timescale on how long you should take to put something right? I don't know.
Well, what's this
opinion?
If you're talking about the death of 16 children, the minute you're told, "We think you've got this wrong," you then double check, then I would have put it right if I could within minutes. It certainly wouldn't still be silent after goodness knows how many hours. Mark.
No, it's true. I understand. But again, you know, who's to say to put a finger on how long, you take to apologise for something? So, okay, you could be tarnished and marred, but
All right. You had your point. Mark, thank you. Have yourself a good weekend. Conversation will continue. The Health Secretary is joining us after the news to talk about a crackdown on vapes that are targeting children. But what about the ban and the crackdown in June of last year about the availability of buying disposable vapes? LBC's reporter George Icke put that crackdown to the test.
Shop here has just sold me this Elux Pro 600 puff cotton candy vape, which is illegal. It's a disposable device. There's no way to change the pod, and there's nowhere to charge it. That is an illegal vape.
More on that after this. Just turned 7:46, LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
The former Minister, MP and MEP, Anne Widdecombe, has died at the age of 78. Andy Burnham appears set to become Labour's new leader without a contest. And vapes could soon start being sold in plain packaging under government plans to stop them being marketed to children. LBC weather, sunny and hot for most, spells of rain for the north of Scotland. A high of 35 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There's only one lane open on the M25, clockwise, just after Junction 5 at the M26. It's for these emergency repair works. There are delays of over an hour all the way back to Junction 3 at the M20. Also, queues of about 3 miles back onto the M26. Also on the M25, it is very busy on the western stretch, anti-clockwise, from Junction 17 at Maple Cross to 14 at Heathrow, after a car broke down, although it's now been recovered. Also delays on the M40 southbound to the M25 junction. That's for the emergency works. The A40 remains closed westbound at the Marylebone flyover, and there are lengthy queues on the North Circular Road eastbound to Wembley after an accident. On the underground, delays on the Piccadilly, Jubilee and Metropolitan lines.
This is LBC.
At AJ Bell, we believe investing is for everyone. And when we say everyone, we mean your dad, Dan, Danielle, Dean, Dave, Dale, Dell's delivery driver Denise, Denise's dentist Dinesh, and Devon's strongest man, Donathan. Donathan, that can't be right. Donathan? Well, whatever your name is. If you're a real person, investing is for you too. AJ Bell, feel good investing. The value of your investments can go up or down.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
Octopus Energy is now Britain's biggest energy supplier, trusted by over 8 million customers, because we do things differently. When you call, you'll speak to a real person. No robotic scripts, no computer says no. Just an honest conversation with someone who actually wants to help. Join the millions who've already made the move. Octopus Energy, recommended by Which, a record 9 years running. Visit octopus.energy/better for verification.
For whoever they want to be in life, give them a great start with WellKid. Carefully balanced, great-tasting vitamins and minerals for 4 to 12-year-olds with specific nutrients such as zinc and vitamin D, which support normal immune system function. The WellKid range from Vitabiotics, from Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine, and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
Get unlimited video calls with vets from First Vet with Pets in a Pickle. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
When you're watching the match in bed, when you're streaming a game on your commute, when you just have to catch all the action.
Come on, come on.
Go! Sorry.
Who cares? What's a spilt coffee after a goal like that?
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And a TV licence covers you to watch all TV channels, including live TV on streaming services, so you can cheer along no matter what time you're watching the football. Search TV licence together.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? A record 9 years running.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
Just coming up on 10 minutes before eight, and here's some disturbing research from ASH, the Action on Smoking and Health. They've discovered that one in five 11 to 17-year-olds have tried vaping. The organisation also says attractive, and I'm quoting, attractive, colourful branding and images have driven the appeal of vapes to children, leading to an increase in use. Well, the government are determined to try and do something about it, and here with details, Labour MP and Health and Social Care Secretary, James Murray. Thanks for coming on, sir. What action are you and your colleagues going to take on this? Because it must be a great concern to you. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, no, it is a great concern to us, and that's why we're launching our consultation today about implementing some changes, which will mean that vapes and vaping products can no longer be targeted and promoted to young people. And what this involves is things like removing the colourful packaging, putting it in just plain white packaging with text on it, making sure the vapes themselves are not colourful, they're just black or white or grey, and removing the promotion from the front of the counter, so it's behind the counter, in the way that cigarettes are, where at the moment, if you're buying a pack of cigarettes, you have to ask the shopkeeper to get it for you, making it more equivalent to that. And as you said, Nick, you know, there's about a million 11 to 17-year-olds last year tried vaping. You know, it's not good for kids to be addicted to nicotine. It has a real impact on them. And we think this is a really important way of making sure they're not promoted to young people.
Well, your action is to be welcome. But can I put it to you, why consultation? Because my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, I normally am, you have to be 18 to buy these products. So why do we need to consult over this, Secretary of State? Why don't you just effectively mandate it?
Well, the reason why we're doing the consultation is because as a result of these changes, businesses will have to adapt. And so it's fair for us to ask businesses and others their views, so we make sure the implementation is done in the right way. But look, the support for this amongst parents is overwhelming. I think it's the right thing to do. You know, we want to make sure this happens, which is why we're getting on with this consultation now, so that we can bring this into place as soon as possible. Because, you know, at the moment, I think everyone knows that experience of seeing the way that vapes are promoted with colourful posters with names like cotton candy.
Yes.
When it's talking about
pink lemonade and watermelon. I mean, these are rather dubious marketing aims, I would put to you, Secretary
of
State.
Well, I would say it's pretty clear what the marketing aims there are, which is focused on children and young people. Because, you know, if you're an adult thinking about going from smoking to vaping, which is a good thing, by the way, you know, to quit
smoking.
Something
you support, of course, to bring you to try and ease off the nicotine input, presumably.
Exactly, and it's good if adults switch from cigarettes to vaping. I think if you're an adult in that situation, you'd have thought it through you'll go into a shop and you can ask for a vape. You're not going to be an adult smoker and suddenly see, oh, cotton candy, and that's what switches you. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's pretty clear what's happening here in the way it's being promoted. And you can see in the stats, as you know, a million 11 to 17-year-olds vaped last year. And think of all the impact that nicotine addiction has on their, you know, on their brains, on their mental health, on their attention span, on their sleeping habits. Yes. You know, it's not good.
And lastly on this, what level of research, has there been some definitive research that shows the impact if, God forbid, 11-year-olds start vaping bubblegum flavour? What impact does it have on their health going forward, Secretary of State?
Yeah, well, we know already that if young children are on nicotine products, it has a direct impact on their attention span, on their sleeping, you know, on their, there is some concerns about the development of their brains as well. The other really interesting research, Nick, though, was done by UCL and King's College London, which was about the impact of reducing the packaging attractiveness, you know, making the packaging plain and putting the adverts behind the counter, or removing the adverts and pushing the products behind the counter. And their evidence was published in the Lancet Medical Journal recently, and that shows the impact it has in reducing the likelihood of young people to take up vaping. So we know this would be effective as one of the many tools to reduce vaping amongst young people.
You talk about impact in that area. Can I take you to impact in another area, which is the impact of this heat bubble or heat dome that we are all suffering? Surgeons are breaking off operations midway through after becoming overwhelmed by Britain's heat waves, medical leaders have said. NHS hospitals are reaching extreme temperatures in sweltering conditions and, in some instances, leaving theatre staff dizzy and dehydrated. The number of operations that could be cancelled in 4 days, according to the University of Birmingham, stands at 4,000. What measures are being taken, Secretary of State?
Yeah, well, you're right to raise this as a concern, Nick, because heat is having a big impact on the health service. Let me just start by saying a big thank you to all NHS staff for carrying on going during the heat wave, keeping the services, by and large, going as they should be and helping patients. But there's no doubt that it has an impact. And I was at Watford General Hospital yesterday talking to them about a range of issues, but including how they're responding to the heat wave. And what happens is that each individual hospital or trust will have their own bespoke plan about how to respond to the heat wave. But that usually includes things like putting in extra air conditioning units, ventilation fans in areas where there's particularly high heat. And also, just, it sounds straightforward, but it's important, making sure everyone's hydrated, you know, increasing the level of checking on patients, particularly older people. Have they got enough fluid to make sure they're hydrated? That's the kind of response that we need for heat waves. And I would just say as well that, you know, we're quite used to the idea about the NHS planning for winter pressures. I think that's something we've talked about for many, many years. What we're seeing now is the importance of planning for heatwave pressures as well. And some of the work that I've been doing as Secretary of State is working with NHS leaders to make sure we have a similar response to heatwaves as we do to winter.
But what does that look like in practical terms? Because at the moment, you're effectively just saying, be sure that you drink lots of water. I think we need these mobile air conditioning units, don't we, if we can get our hands on them. And certainly, I don't know what the temperature is in an operating theatre. I don't know whether it's going to be hot or whether it's going to be cold, but we don't really want operations having to be effectively postponed or halted.
You're absolutely right. We don't want operations to be impacted by the heat. And you're also right to say that, you know, mobile air conditioning units, ventilation fans are important. Over the coming years, there's a budget of £6.75 billion over the next 9 years, which is going into the NHS estate. That's about modernising our hospitals, and part of that will include ventilation, air conditioning and so on. But as an immediate response now, mobile units are often the response. It will vary between different trusts and hospitals depending on their buildings, when their buildings were built, what equipment they have available, which is why each trust has their own bespoke plan to respond to a heat wave. But the critical thing here is to keep the NHS going rather than us taking a setback every time we have a heat wave.
Last minute or so together, you might have had sight of a story in the I newspaper. The nation's 1.6 million weight loss jab users need to start strength training. This is official guidance from Chief Medical Officer Chris Whitty, someone who I'm sure you know of, Professor Whitty, I should say, I'm so sorry. He's saying a small amount of exercise for those who don't know physical activity because of the explosion in popularity of jabs such as Mounjaro and Wegovy. How important is that in your view?
Yeah, it's really important. And look, when Professor Whitty gives advice, my advice would be to listen to it, because he's a very impressive man. I'm really privileged to work with him in this role. You know, he really has absolutely the right intentions and aims for all of the advice that he sets out. And I think one of the important points that he makes in his new guidance around exercising is that even little bits of exercise all add up. You know, so if it's not like you have to go on a half hour run every day and that's the only way you can keep fit, just walking down to the shops, doing a bit of gardening, using the stairs rather than the lift, all of that adds up and contributes towards people being healthier.
Finally, what advice would you give to restore Britain's leader, Rupert Lowe? There's considerable anger, building anger, I have to say, Secretary of State. He's referred to just one murder as Dunblane, which you will recall, 16 innocent children and a teacher lost their lives. He was speaking on a US podcast many hours ago. There's been no retraction, no apology, no clarification. Secretary of State.
I think that's revolting to say that. I think it's awful for him to say that. It's disrespectful. I mean, I would be thinking about the families of everyone who was killed in Dunblane. I would be thinking about what they want to see happen. And, you know, I think I wouldn't want to give Rupert Lowe any more, you know, airtime on this, because I think it's insulting and he should retract it.
Grateful for your time. James Murray explaining his crackdown now on how vapes will be put in plain packing. Health and Social Secretary James Murray, thank you. 2 minutes before eight. Let's get one call in on Rupert Lowe. Ashley in Burgess Hill. It is as low as you can get, isn't it? Good morning.
Nick, just very quickly. So I'll just pick up on what James just finished on there. This is about getting airtime. It's about getting front page. This guy is an absolute moron. I mean, it's disgusting. It's despicable. He's leaving it hanging in the air. He may very well come out with some limp letters apology at some point.
Don't you think the damage is done, Ashley?
Absolutely is.
Yeah.
This was manifested. He's let this build and fester. He is despicable, disgraceful. And I just, Nick, I wonder where this country's going. The sorts of people looking to lead us and advise what our kids. Honestly, I'm horrified at some of the people we've got in government.
And, of course, trying to get into government as well, we have to remember that. Ashley, thank you. I hear your point that we are talking about him, but not all publicity is good publicity, and I'll use the expression again, this is pretty low, even by his standards. In other news, Andy Burnham posting this statement on social media apologising for Labour's initial response to Israel's actions in Gaza in an interview that the leader of the opposition then, Sir Keir Starmer, gave to me on LBC.
I know many people feel that at the start of Israel's military action in Gaza, my party didn't get it right, and I am sorry about that.
Plus, farewell to the voice of the valleys. Appreciation of the career of Bonnie Tyler coming in the next hour. The 8 o'clock news on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, the former Conservative Minister Anne Widdecombe has died at the age of 78. She served as an MP for 23 years before becoming a Brexit Party member of the European Parliament. She most recently served as Reform UK's Justice and Immigration Spokesperson. Anne Widdecombe was a staunch supporter of the UK's departure from the EU and clashed with MEPs several times, including here in 2019.
The powers that be have decided to actually increase the size of fishermen's meshes, thereby reducing their income by 40%. That's what you do here. That's why we're going.
Grazie, news conclude.
Are long. We're gayen. We're off.
Anne Widdecombe, who's died at the age of 78. Andy Burnham looks set to become the next Prime Minister after 322 Labour MPs backed him in the party's leadership contest. He's now only one short of the number needed to ensure that no one else can challenge him. Labour MPs have until next Wednesday to express a preference. Officials in Spain say at least 12 people have died in a wildfire in the southern province of Almeria. A sustained heat wave with temperatures of around 40 Celsius has led to wildfires across much of southern Europe in recent days and weeks. Labour has accused Reform UK of taking the public for fools amid further questions about the party's financial affairs. It follows reports that the Metropolitan Police has been investigating donations worth £500,000 for more than a year. Reform UK has said the British people are tired of the establishment media doing anything and everything they can to stop the party. And vapes could soon start being sold in plain packaging under government plans to stop them being marketed to children. A 12-week consultation will consider whether the devices can only be sold in white, black or grey. The UK-wide proposals could also introduce restrictions on flavour descriptions. The Health Secretary, James Murray, had just told Nick Ferrari at breakfast there is overwhelming support for the move from parents and guardians.
You can see in the stats, as you know, a million 11 to 17-year-olds vapes last year, and think of all the impact that nicotine addiction has on their, you know, on their brains, on their mental health, on their attention span, on their sleeping habits. Yes. You know, it's not good.
In the city, the FTSE 100 just reopened at 10,472. It closed down 16 yesterday. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.17. LBC weather, sunny and hot for most today. Spells of rain in the north of Scotland with some thundery downpours possible in the west of England later. A high of 35 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Add more wahey to the day when you add more fun to your milk with Nesquik. Fortified with vitamin C and D. Nesquik is available in chocolate, strawberry and banana flavour. Nesquik, let's grow the fun.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after eight on Friday, July the 10th. Coming up in this hour, that interview with Sir Keir Starmer when he was leader of the opposition. Prime Minister in waiting, Andy Burnham, said there should have been better action taken as the Middle East conflict heated up and the idea of shutting off water should have been addressed quicker. We'll look at that in more detail. In other news, the disturbing report, social media linked to an increase in young people being treated for obsessive compulsive disorder, otherwise known as ECD. Lee Wallbank is from the charity OCD Action and says...
OCD needs to be seen as a serious mental health condition, and policymakers and the government need to invest in OCD and OCD services.
Getting ready for the big kickoff.
It's a whiskey drink, it drinks a vodka drink, it drinks a lager drink, it drinks a cider drink.
Remember, enjoy your drinks, but drink, of course, with caution and don't go too far. We'll be talking about the Met Police with more details on that one. We'll come back to the conversation we had about the importance of putting vaping in plain packaging, as we just heard a few minutes ago with the Health Secretary, and an appreciation of a great career. The voice of the valleys and this breakthrough hit. Great Bonnie Tyler, and what was the secret that she shared with me when I interviewed her decades ago when I was on The Sun and she was a big pop star? I'll tell you later in the hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
PM in waiting, Andy Burnham, apologising for Labour's initial response to Israel's military action in Gaza, saying the party, and I quote, didn't get it right, needs to do better, close quotes, and will under his leadership. Does it signal a significant shift in the UK's approach to the Middle East? The UK's friendship with Israel? And if so, what should that friendship look like? We go back to that interview. It was the Labour Party conference in 2023. Sir Keir Starmer, then leader of the opposition. And I interviewed him about Israel's actions in Gaza.
I'm very clear. Israel must have that, does have that right to defend herself. And Hamas bears responsibility.
A siege is appropriate? Cutting off power, cutting off water? Sir Keir?
Well, I think that Israel does have that right. It is an ongoing situation. Obviously, everything should be done within international law, but I don't want to step away from the sort of core principles that Israel has a right to defend herself and Hamas bears responsibility for these terrorist acts. And I would call on all responsible states, particularly Middle East responsible states, to call this out for what it is.
Now, a few months after that, that man, Sir Keir, became Prime Minister. In a few days, this man will take over as Prime Minister.
I know many people feel that at the start of Israel's military action in Gaza, my party didn't get it right, and I am sorry about that. The response has too often not been good enough. We need to do better. Yes, we have taken some important steps. These include recognising the Palestinian state,
placing sanctions on Israeli ministers and imposing waves of sanctions on violent settlers and the organisations that support them. I also fully support the restrictions on arms licences to make sure that no British bombs or bullets can be used by the IDF in Gaza or in the West Bank.
Let's put some of these points to Ali Milani, who's national chair at the Labour Muslim Network. Ali, good to see you again. Sport, I hope all is well in your world. Two questions. What was the impact of that interview nearly 3 years ago? And where does the direction of the relationship between the UK and Israel need to go now in your eyes? Morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Always a real pleasure to join you. Look, that interview, as you probably know and many know, was the starting point of, I think, a really, really troubling path that we went down that ultimately caused a real fracture between the Labour Party and many parts of our support. I mean, I'm the chair of the Labour Muslim Network, and it certainly caused a fracture in the relationship, a historic relationship between British Muslims and the Labour Party, but much further than that. And we've seen us lose votes to the Liberal Democrats, to the Greens and others as a result of that. Principally, I think it caused an enormous amount of anger and hurt. And I think this is where Andy Burnham's apology is really, really important and welcome, in that he addresses in his apology that anger and hurt that has been caused within so much of our communities. And it can act, I think, hopefully, as a reset between us and so many of our voters around the country. Where we need to go next, look, I have
particularly our relationship with Israel. What would you want to see there, Ali? Sorry to interrupt you.
No problem. Look, where I think needs to happen is we need to have an ethical and moral foreign policy, including holding Israel and this current Israeli administration more specifically to account, whether that's on their actions in Gaza and making sure that international law is complied with and those who have broken international law are held to account, whether that's on settlement trade and the expansion, the illegal expansion of Israel in and their settlements that are causing enormous problems for a two-state solution, as well as the settler violence that is increasing, particularly in the West Bank, which the Israeli government have done very little to address. So I think there needs to be a fundamental reset in our relationship with Israel and our ethical and moral foreign policy, which I hope that the Labour Party can enact. This apology and this intervention from Andy Burnham is a good insight into that.
Has Sir Keir not been robust as he should be with Netanyahu, in your view, Ali?
No, I don't think he has. I mean, some actions have been taken, for example, but I would support a much further ban on weapons being sold to Israel that we know are being used in Gaza. And in my view, and in the view of many scholars and international law experts, are a breach and a serious violation of international law. And I think, and you know, it's not just me, but constitutes genocide. In Gaza, and the International Scholars for Genocide have agreed on that point, and the United Nations has put out reports on this. But also, you know, we need to deal with what is it's a radical and extremist Israeli government, including their actions and their continued expansion and annexation of areas of the West Bank. I have to say, Nick, it's really interesting that I'm on your show, because that interview that you played with Keir Starmer, I happened to be on your show 6 hours after that.
Right.
And I mentioned at the time that this was a likely road that we would go down.
I remember. Yeah.
Not to break some news, but at the time when Keir had given that interview, I had communication with his office. And I was told that an apology was coming in the hours after. And in fact, I was told that it would drop before I would be on your show, which never came. And ultimately, it took, I think, over 9 days, and we never even got an apology in the end for that comment. It was rather an explanation. And so, you know, that caused enormous amounts of hurt and anger. And ultimately, even though the apology didn't come, he tried to explain what he really meant.
And it got worse. I agree. I remember discussing that with you. Ali, thank you for sharing that. Enjoy your weekend. Always enjoy speaking with you. Look after yourself, sport. Ali Milani, National Chair at the Labour Muslim Network, 11 after 8. Listening, Emma Burnell, who's editor of Labour List. The position, the stance of Labour towards Israel, how divisive is it an issue, would you say, within Labour ranks? Emma, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, thanks.
In terms of how divisive Labour's stance on Israel and Gaza is, I don't think it is that divisive, because you've got people across the party who have been horrified by what they've seen in Gaza. Mm-hmm. So someone on the Labour who would openly say they're on the the Labour moderate wing. Wes Streeting has been almost as vocal about this as anybody else. So this is not really a left-right issue within the party. It's always, you know, important to be conscientious, and Andy Burnham really was in the video, that you make sure that you are referencing what happened on October 7th.
So does the relationship with Israel need to be recalibrated with the new Prime Minister, in your view?
I mean, I think we've been moving in that direction for some time, but as you and Ali were just discussing, the start of how that relationship was set in the minds of the public, in the minds of the Muslim community, in the minds of progressive voters, there was so much damage done that it's been impossible to come back from that. Even though both Andy Burnham and Ali have said there have been moves that have gone in that direction, you know, things like the recognition of the Palestinian state and some sanctions. So I think it's about a reset moment and just saying, you know, this is different, we've moved on.
And when Andy Burnham is going to take over, who would be best placed to be a foreign secretary, to be the person who fronts up relations, not just with Israel, but of course other foreign nations? What would the readers of Labour List, who would they be looking to, Emma?
I couldn't tell you who they're looking to yet, although if anyone who is a reader of Labour List wants to join in our fantasy cabinet game, I will be able to tell you by the end of next week who the favourites for each role are.
Is fantasy cabinet already running on Labour List, or have you
it
just...
It absolutely is.
Have you got it to hand? Can you walk me through a couple of... Who's sort of leading...
I am not going to spoil my...
Oh, come on, Emma. We've got a big weekend ahead of us. I can't go through that England game not knowing who the fantasy chancellor is, for goodness sake.
I mean, we're already tense enough about England. I think, you know, you've just got to take your time and play your fantasy cabinet while you're waiting.
Emma, look after yourself. Emma Burnell refusing to share with me who's in the fantasy cabinet will come to your reaction. If you are a Labour supporter, if you indeed are a Labour voter, that within days, barring the most extraordinary seismic event, Andy Burnham will be the new Prime Minister. He's already talking about how Sir Keir Starmer got in those initial stages of the conflict of the Gaza. Israel's actions in Gaza got that wrong. How does the relationship between the United Kingdom and Israel need to be redefined or recalibrated, a word I use there? We'll take your calls on that. And I briefly mentioned the big game. There's a lot of sport going on. Of course, we're looking at this afternoon, we'll be looking at Wimbledon and hoping, wow, can Lightning strike for a third time and that young Brit get into the final? And then, of course, tomorrow night's big kickoff. Because maybe a while to get there, didn't it? We better stay with it. Here we go. Wonderwall, and let's hope there's some Wonderballs as well in that game. We'll get ready for that in the next hour. It's 8:15, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The former Minister, MP and MEP, Anne Widdecombe, has died at the age of 78. Andy Burnham appears set to become Labour's new leader without a contest. And vapes could soon start being sold in plain packaging under government plans to stop them being marketed to children. LBC weather, sunny and hot for most, spells of rain for the north of Scotland. A high of 35 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Traffic is still being held on the M25 anti-clockwise just after junction 28 at the M11. It's following an accident and there are delays back to junction 28 at the A12. Also on the M25, those severe delays do continue clockwise to junction 5 at the M26, and that's for the emergency works. It's slow from junction 3 at the M20. Very slow on the M40 southbound to the M25 junction. That's because of the ongoing repairs. Two problems on the North Circular Road. Firstly, eastbound queues to Wembley after an accident, and also eastbound, it's very slow to the A10 junction at Edmonton. It's because a van's broken down and one lane remains closed for recovery.
This is LBC.
Here's a tale of two commuters. Steve was in a rush and needed to park near the station. Jane also needed a space and booked in advance with Your Parking Space. Steve had a meeting at 9 and panic at 8. Nowhere to park. Jane, she's already in the office and enjoying that morning latte. With Your Parking Space, you can browse thousands of spaces across London and reserve one instantly. Use the code GET10 for £10 off your first booking. Download the Your Parking Space app today.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
In a world full of noise and uncertainty, IG is the investment platform that backs you. Forget the dubious tips from that guy down the pub. Get real-time insights, analysis and tools. No more fat cat brokers clawing your gains. Pay zero commission on your investments. Switch to a platform trusted by British investors for over 50 years. IG. Trade. Invest. Progress. Your capital's at risk. Other fees may apply.
London. The app for black cabs is here. Jump. Get about with drivers who have the world-famous knowledge and know every street in London. And unlike other black cab apps, you'll only pay the meter fare. No booking fees, no surge fees, no it's raining fees, no there's a game on fees. No fees ever. Just tap the app to hail your black cab. Jump. The app for the cabs that make London, London. Download Jump today.
When you're watching the match in bed, when you're streaming a game on your commute, when you just have to catch all the action.
Come on, come on.
Go! Oops, sorry.
Who cares? What's a spilt coffee after a goal like that?
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And a TV licence covers you to watch all TV channels, including live TV on streaming services, so you can cheer along no matter what time you're watching the football. Search TV licence together.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Just coming on 19 minutes after 8, counting down the days to a new Prime Minister who has accepted the initial response by Sir Keir Starmer in that interview over Israel's early military action in Gaza. They didn't get it right. So what does it need to look like now? Hassan is in Westminster. What does a proper relationship look like to you? Good morning, Hassan.
Good morning, Nick. It was interesting to hear Ali because I campaigned for him in the 2019 elections as he was trying to take down Boris Johnson.
And he was a great candidate. I remember that. Yes.
Yeah. But I think Starmer has Burnham has recognized that Starmer made a disastrous series of mistakes on the Gaza issue. But at the same time, Burnham sort of falls very short of really acknowledging that what is happening is a genocide, and also changing the relationship we have with Israel, which means not selling arms to them, which means not flying surveillance flights to provide intel to the Israelis, even when the hostages have been released for months. Mm-hmm. And it also means that we are not sort of treating Israel as a normal country with which to have relations with. So I think we should be much more replicating the Spanish example, which has been much more direct in its dealing with Israel, but also with the US.
Hassan, so how would you characterize Sir Keir's attempt at relations with Israel, Hassan?
I think they were terrible. I think he was extremely compliant or pliant in front of that. In front of the Israelis. I think he, as a human rights lawyer, he should have known exactly what is going on. I think his complete sort of refusal to accept that what was happening on the ground was genocide, his attempt to sort of keep shrugging and saying, oh, until an international court rules, we can't really call it X or Y. Mm-hmm. These are not the standard that he set for Russia. Okay. He immediately called out Russian war crimes. He didn't wait for an International Court of Justice ruling. So why was this duplicity when it comes to Israel? And that has to change. And unless it changes, Ali and others can try and make a rapprochement with the wider community, but it's not going to work.
Okay. Hassan, thank you for getting started. Plenty more reaction coming in on that, but we will take a break because we're looking ahead to a major sporting event tomorrow night, which is, of course, that bit. And we'll give you, I think, 10 things you never knew about Norway, as we did with 10 things you never knew about DR Congo and Mexico. We'll do that later. But let's start with the policing side of tomorrow's big game. In the studio now is Matt Jukes, who's Deputy Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police and was head of the National Counter-Terrorism Policing as well. So a very senior copper. Good to have you on board. Thanks for coming in, Deputy Commissioner.
It's good to see you, Nick. Thank you.
First question, the weather, the extraordinary heat that we are all enduring or enjoying. You've got a short-sleeve shirt on, so you've probably been slightly better than I am. But what does it mean for crime? Does crime go up, down, or is it unaffected?
Well, Nick, I'm here in my short-sleeve shirt, but of course a lot of colleagues are out there. They're in that heavy
vests,
kit, aren't they? Wearing all of that, doing their incredible work. And for them, the calls are going up.
Calls have
gone up over the last weeks by about a third.
Is it domestic or what is it?
A whole range of things. I mean, we definitely see more domestic abuse. Alcohol-related crime is the big thing there. Long days, people are drinking. We just get an increased volume of calls about people in public spaces. You know, we want to hear from the victims of domestic abuse. Of course, we want those calls to come. As you know, we get a lot of other calls,
yep,
not all of them for police attendance. So really busy time for colleagues.
And it's going to be a busy time tomorrow, Saturday night. What do people need to do? Because you've been around the job long enough. They're going to go out. They want to watch the game. Many want to go to a pub. The collective atmosphere. They're going to have a beer or a few glasses of wine. What do you need to tell them? Act responsibly, right?
Yeah, I mean, we want people to really, really enjoy this national moment. Have a great, great evening out. We want people to know how they're going to get home, make their plans. We want people to be responsible. And, you know, if they've got problems that need the police, we want them to call us. We want those victims of domestic abuse who may be more exposed because of the amount of drinking that takes place. We want to hear from them. What we don't want are the calls we get from people, you know, about a delivery that hasn't arrived or all those other things. As you know, we've talked about it often, you know, more than 8 out of 10 of our calls probably won't need police attendance. So it's really important that people prepare for a great night, celebrate a great night. We want everyone to do that, get home safely.
Can I raise with you a very concerning issue, which I'm sure you and your colleagues are fully across, but it's something that was not a problem when I was allowed in going to pubs, and that's called drink spiking, which has become a major issue. Your words on that, I mean, really, probably particularly for vulnerable people, you should never actually let that drink out of your hand, should you?
No, I mean, we're really vigilant to the idea of spiking. I was with one of the brilliant forensic scientists who's been working on it earlier this week, and absolutely, you know, take care of your drinks, take care of your friends. We're on the lookout. We've got bar staff and the security staff at all of these premises vigilant as well.
There is a real attitude to it.
So all across London over the weekend, we'll have plainclothes. Well, you know, won't tell you where they are, Nick, no, but I'll tell you they're out there.
Okay.
We've got plainclothes officers and others out there doing their brilliant work. And, you know, they'll be confronting all sorts of challenges over the weekend.
How much was the challenge there in the Edgware Road earlier last night? It is reported that you had to deploy riot police to central London. This was after France beat Morocco 2-0. It is reported that Moroccan fans did not take too well and there were altercations and incidents with police officers, one of whom was injured. Can you give me an update, Deputy Commissioner?
I can. I mean, we saw bottle throwing, we saw fireworks let off, we've had to deploy officers with their full helmets and shields on the street. So a serious incident, disorder, it's been dealt with. 4 people have been arrested. We'll be circulating CCTV, social media images, because we'll go after those who haven't yet been arrested and need to be. Just as I was walking in, I got the very welcome update to say a colleague who had been struck on the head with a bottle thrown at them has been released from hospital.
Okay.
But that officer was knocked unconscious, you know, very serious in that case. I'm really pleased to know they're doing well. I'll be catching up with them later. And it's worth me saying, just before we finish, Nick, that last night I was at the National Police Bravery Awards.
All right.
And there we saw 3 Met officers, Yasmin, Malloy, Cameron, national winners for the bravery they showed after a terrible incident in Hainault,
you'll remember,
2024.
Yep.
And, you know, a real credit to the Metropolitan Police. And today, actually, also the funeral of PC Jess Turnbull, 19 years old, killed, you might also recall, in Northumbria very recently. So the colleagues who were out last night confronting this violence, showing enormous courage, under the strain the service is under, they will all probably have one eye on the game, and but of course won't be able to enjoy it like everybody else because of the work they're having to do.
Finishing with the football, and I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but if England triumph against Norway and Argentina beats Switzerland on Sunday, you're going to have England versus Argentina. Now, there's a little bit of background, of course, to that. I don't want to make you mystic, Matt, but Matt Jukes, how concerned might you be about that clash, English and Argentinian fans?
Well, listen, I think predictions are really difficult, aren't they, in any of this football world. I think what we can know, to be frank, we're going to see what we've seen. We're going to see more calls. We're going to see more drinking. I hope we're going to see more great goals for England, and we're going to see success. But you can know, as we were last night, and the communities across London can know, we'll be ready to deal with things that come up. Call us on the things we need to. Please hold back on the calls we don't need to take. Officers out there are melting in the heat, but they will be there to come to you if you need us.
And lastly, and I'm pushing my luck here, do you do advanced planning for a victory parade? Would something like that have already started?
Deputy Commissioner?
We are definitely thinking about what the very best outcomes could mean, and we hope we're going to be alongside the rest of England in celebrating that in a few weeks' time.
So there is some poor man or woman who's already plotting where that parade, if we get that far, some team is already working on that.
Yeah, while everyone else is watching the results and wondering what will happen, there are people who are locked in rooms imagining what that'll be like. We saw a really big, lively, and at a couple of points problematic parade after Arsenal's victory. So we know what to get ready for. We hope we're getting ready for it. We're always going to plan for things. And, you know, we're all looking forward to the weekend. But we're also looking forward to a weekend where we know policing's going to be very busy.
Plan your way to the pub, plan your way away, drink responsibly, behave yourself, keep an eye on your drink, and let's hope we have a great result and allow the police to do the other jobs that they have to do. Will you pass our congratulations on to the team that did so well at those bravery, National Bravery Awards?
Really thank delightful. You very much for okay. that, Nick, I will.
Thanks for coming by. Deputy Commissioner Matt Jukes joining thank us you. Here on LBC. 8:27. Let's come back to the conversation concerning the incoming Prime Minister, it would seem, Jason in Marylebone. How does he need to rework the relationship, would you say, with Israel?
By being honest, by having a stance and sticking to it, taking a side, if you like. But more importantly, Nick, and it is really important, a very good friend of mine that I've known since the 80s, called Joanne, she has been involved with the Nova Festival, Nova Exhibition that's been going on. Thankfully, they've managed to get it extended by about a week. Until
it ends on the 15th,
yes. And I was so impressed to see the Mayor of London finally going to it yesterday.
Yeah, and I just want to say that credit to Sir Sadiq and to his team. I understand he went there, he met with a lot of people, he posed for pictures. Unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be a professional relationship between me and the mayor, which I mourn and I grieve because I'd love to have him take your calls and your questions. But credit to the man for going. I think it was very important. Jason?
Absolutely. So I'm not going to say the negative things I'd like to say. I just want to say thank you to the Mayor of London for attending. I think it would have been very nice if the potential new Prime Minister went there, because then perhaps he would have a better understanding that what happened in Israel, if people aren't aware of it, they did actually attempt a genocide. It's fact. That's what they tried to do. The retaliation for that is what I would imagine the vast majority of countries would do if their country was attacked in the same way, right?
Many would argue, Jason, yes, initially, but A, switching off water, and B, the continued retaliation all these months after is, they would say, beyond the pale for Israel. Jason?
I understand exactly what you're saying, and I'm not saying that Israel always got it right, but what I am saying is that they are a tiny country surrounded by enemies. And the attack that happened, and again, I have to keep saying it, for people that don't really fully understand or fully believe what went on, please, please, please go to the Nova exhibition, because you will have an understanding of the sickness and the vile behaviour of what really did actually happen. And then you've got to put yourself in that position and think that if this happened to the UK, where would we want the UK to draw the line? Where is the line once something like that has actually happened?
The Nova exhibition runs until July the 15th. It's been extended. It's been on a Europe-wide, it may even have been a national-wide, a worldwide, but certainly a Europe-wide trip, and it's here in London. Jason, thank you. Got to get off to the news. Damon, you'll be the next caller on this. Also coming up, complete change of pace. We get into the problems of OCD and a troubling report suggesting that social media has a considerable impact on cases of OCD among the young. Sophie Ashcroft has it.
If you have that bad thought, it's like, I need to do that again. I check excessively before I go to bed.
Do you have it? How debilitating is it? Did you manage to work your way through it? As you, one of your children, or some of your children got it. We'll look at that in more detail. The menace of OCD. 8:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara on LBC. Let's get some headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Tributes are being paid to the former MP and MEP, Anne Widdecombe, who's died at the age of 78. A long-time Conservative politician, she most recently served as Reform UK's Justice and Immigration Advisor. Andy Burnham says he's deeply grateful to the 322 Labour MPs who have so far nominated him to be the party's next leader and Prime Minister. He's now only one short of the number of MPs needed to ensure that no one else can enter the contest. And vapes could soon start being sold in plain packaging under government plans to stop them being marketed to children. The UK-wide proposals could also introduce restrictions on flavour descriptions. LBC weather, sunny and hot for many. Spells of rain for the north of Scotland with some thundery downpours in the west. Later, a high of 35 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
By 2030, if we carry on with this level of welfare spending, that's overall welfare, that's not just it, it's going to cost every household £12,500 a year. That, folks, isn't right. So, if support could be provided in fair ways and in ways that does actually help people without money, that needs thinking about, doesn't it?
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4pm. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Fever Tree Ginger Beer. There's no one quite like you, is there? That fiery character, warming undertones. Mixed, you make a spirited Moscow Mule. But even on your own, you still have the most delectable kick. Fever Tree. Straight up or mixed. It's a matter of taste.
Chase gives you 2% cash back on your everyday spending.
Every day? Like Monday's train to work?
Yes.
Tuesday's big shop?
Yes again.
Wednesday's coffee treat?
Yes, cash back.
Thursday's lunch, Friday's brunch and Saturday's takeaway?
Yep, yep and yep.
Super.
Oh, nothing on Sundays.
I take it easy.
Lovely. Enjoy 2% cash back on debit or credit card spending on groceries, restaurants, everyday transport and fuel. Search Chase Bank. 18 plus UK residents. Chase current and saver accounts required. Maximum £20 per month. Eligibility qualification. Exceptions and T's and C's apply.
A message from TfL.
I saw Alicia's photo in my newsfeed. All I can think of is her family. How they're getting on. If they're getting on. I didn't look when I pulled out, and she never made it home. Sounds crazy, but it felt like her motorbike came out of nowhere. But I know the truth. I didn't look again.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Up to speed.
Your Formula One podcast.
Round 10 is the iconic Spa circuit in Belgium.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday on YouTube or Global Player.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
8:33, on to OCD in a moment, particularly instances of OCD with the young. But let's talk with Damon in Hemel Hempstead. Andy Burnham coming into position, suggesting Labour didn't get the initial response right as regards the conflict with Israel. Where do we need to go now? What does the relationship, a good relationship, look like to you? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I'm afraid Andy Burnham's got it wrong before he's even started. The problem is not Israel. The problem is Hamas, a proscribed terrorist organisation that committed a genocide on October the 7th. Mm-hmm. Is still the governing power in Gaza. How can a neighbour live in peace with a proscribed terrorist organisation running a country? It's impossible. The whole idea of a two-state solution is not wanted in Gaza. It's not wanted in Israel right now, post-October the 7th. It's just a Western colonial ideal that's being enforced on a Middle Eastern region that doesn't want it. Andy Burnham, if he's serious about having peace in the Middle East, must move heaven and earth to remove Hamas and the terrorists from the area.
In reality, how much can a British Prime Minister do in this field?
He probably can't do very much in this field, but the point is that he's attacking the wrong side. He's attacking Israel for defending her citizens. It's the duty of the government to get rid of Hamas.
It's specifically, if you remember what the then leader of the opposition, now Prime Minister, said, is it legitimate to switch off water? And he said it was. Is it legitimate to switch off water to civilians?
Why does an enemy have to provide food and water?
I didn't say provide food and water. But Israel has the ability to... Is it right to switch off water to hospitals and to children?
The water is coming from Israel.
Yes, no, I know you've told me that twice, sir. Is it right to switch off water?
Why doesn't Egypt provide it?
No, okay, it does, no, sir, sorry, Damon, it doesn't. The water comes via Israel. And the issue that Sir Keir Starmer got rather skewered on was that he supported switching off water ultimately to hospitals and to children.
But
I'm glad you agree, because Israel did.
But there's thousands and thousands of tons of aid that goes into Gaza every day.
But what Andy Burnham is saying is that where Sir Keir Starmer got it wrong was to support the idea that switching off water is a legitimate tactic of war. And I would say, while I totally take on board the pressures and the tensions and the danger in which Israel finds itself, you can't switch off water to children.
Okay. The water is now on.
The water is now on, yes.
The water is being supplied by Israel to her enemy, Hamas.
Yes, it
Which other country ever at war has ever done that?
I can't imagine from memory. I cannot think of one immediately. I doubt if ever.
It's never happened before. So, this post-event naval gazing by Burnham is totally irrelevant. But if he's serious about having peace in the region, he's attacking the wrong side.
Damon, thanks for your strong views. Let's see what others make of it. Jack in Dagenham, because of the Prime Minister's position on Israel, he lost the support of many Labour voters. When his leadership came under pressure, he didn't have the support in the Labour Party. I fear Andy Burnham will not be tough enough on Israel. Meanwhile, Rhys says we're getting a glimpse of Andy Burnham's priorities today. He's not announcing any domestic policies, but he's eager to signal his position on Israel. Looks like we've got another Prime Minister whose focus is the vocal, very online minority. What none of us can go through is this one has to stay. All right, and work. What are we at? 7 in 10 years. There's no company could go through 7 chief executives in 10 years. The company would collapse. If you know the industry that I know, no newspaper would survive 7 different editors in 10 years. It would collapse. Let's go to the sporting arena. I don't think many football clubs would survive. They'd continue, but they wouldn't fare particularly well. 7 managers in 10 years. If they have picked another. Bit of a dud in Andy Burnham. God knows where it leaves the country. Should we move on to other matters, health matters, and important matters, not least because it affects our children? Social media being linked to an increase in young people being treated for OCD, or obsessive compulsive disorder. The number of 16 to 24-year-olds with OCD has tripled in the past decade. This data coming from the NHS, by the way. The health service giving 670,000 courses of treatment last year. If you're not aware, OCD is a mental health condition which someone has obsessive thoughts and compulsive behaviours. For example, someone may obsess about germs and therefore feel compelled to wash their hands hundreds of times a day. And I suppose it's time for a confession, because I once suffered from OCD and I was in that age group, 16 through 24. And the person who helped me through pointed out it was because I was doing A-levels and I had such enormous stress that I developed effectively a coping technique that, I know this sounds completely mad, I know it sounds... But I had to switch the lights on and off a certain number of times in my bedroom. I don't know why, but it just, that would get me through my A-levels. Nuts or what? Fortunately, I got out of it, but I have nothing but sympathy for folk who are in it. Dr. Lynn Drummond is a consultant psychiatrist specialising in this, and wrote Everything You Need to Know About OCD. What do you see as the impact of social media in this field, Doctor? Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me on your show, Nick. I think this is a complex answer, and I'm probably not going to give you the straightforward answer you'd like. As you say,
I'm OCD, used to it, Lynn. I talk to politicians. I'm not accepting anything straightforward. Don't you worry. On you go, Doc.
OCD is a very serious condition in its severest forms. It has quite a high mortality. It is horrible, nasty, awful thoughts, images, impulses that invade the mind. And to get away from them, you perform a number of behaviours, which you've beautifully described, like switching on and off lights or washing your hands excessively. Its causes, I think we're learning more and more about now. And in the past, when I started out, I was told that OCD was very rare in children. In fact, we know it's the most common disorder in childhood.
Is that right?
And in mild forms, many people do get better and do get over it. I haven't read the article in the Telegraph because it was just sent to me and I'm afraid I couldn't get through the payroll. But I have read the research. And certainly it's now been linked that when you come to people with what we call problematic use of the internet, there's a paper from Professor Grant's group from the States that show that there's an increased rate of people with symptoms of OCD that have this problematic internet use. But I don't need to tell you that correlation doesn't necessarily mean causation. And I think there may be a number of things going on here. I think one of the most important things is that I'm no spring chicken, and I started out in OCD in the 1980s, and at that time I would go on to radio shows and nobody knew what OCD meant. And that wasn't just the general public. I think the medical profession as well were a little bit sort of unsure. We've been working bit by bit to increase awareness and to increase awareness of how severe it can be. But I think that that may well explain some increase in awareness, is that there's much greater. I believe that you educate the general population and that forces everybody to then get on board. And that's why, as I say, I write books and things to educate the general population.
I'm going to mention your book again in a moment. Lynn, what was going on in my head that I thought as a 17 and 18 year old, that I thought, I've got to switch my bedroom lights on and off three times, otherwise I'm not going to be all right. What on earth was going on in my head then, Lynn?
I don't know what was going on in your head, but I wonder if there was some underlying fear there, whether you...
Well, it was A-levels. The person who helped me said the stress of the A... And obviously I wanted to do well at A-levels. I've been studying all those years. And is stress often a contributory factor?
Oh, yes. I mean, if you are stressed, if you're tense, if you're miserable, your OCD symptoms will worsen. When I treat people with OCD and they get better, I always say to them afterwards, when the symptoms start to come back, because life will throw things at you. And for many people, it will come back. And the thing to do is to nip it in the bud before it really takes hold.
Lynn, can you give me an example of someone that you've worked with, that you've helped, the most extreme cases of OCD? Because mine wasn't actually that debilitating. Unfortunately, I worked my way through it. In its most debilitating, what can it look like with patients you've worked with?
Right. Well, I'm going to think about a young person I saw who had spent 2 years in bed and had been placed on a Ripple mattress to prevent
bed sores.
And hadn't got out of bed, was just laying there in his early 20s, due to extreme fear that he wasn't going to be able to do everything perfectly.
How do you work with someone like that? How do you help him or them?
Well, the first thing I did was to get them in a wheelchair.
Right.
And to get physiotherapy to strengthen their leg muscles, and to then work with them to take the risk bit by bit, little tiny bite sizes, regularly, three times a day, towards being imperfect. Because the human condition, we're all imperfect. People like me fly by the seat of our pants on a regular basis.
You and I both, I assure you. Doctor, I will leave it there. Thank you. Lynn Drummond, consultant psychiatrist. You specialise in this field and you wrote Everything You Need to Know About OCD, 844. Amy's in Woking. Amy, what can you tell me? Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I texted in about my son.
Right.
He is 12, turns 12 today.
Right. Happy birthday. What do you get a 12-year-old boy for his birthday? What does he want?
Warhammer.
Oh, right.
Yes.
What colour is... I don't know, what is a Warhammer? What's
a
Warhammer?
That you paint, the little model that you paint.
Oh, me. Those little soldiers and things.
Exactly.
Is that still going?
Still going, yeah.
Good Lord.
So he loves that.
Oh, right. Okay, on you go. Yep.
Just to clarify, he doesn't use social media at all.
Right.
I'm very strict, so doesn't have an iPad, doesn't watch YouTube, nothing like that. So all of this is not related to those kinds of issues. He is diagnosed autistic and ADHD. So obviously those are sort of correlating factors.
Mm-hmm.
He's suffered with symptoms of OCD for many years now.
Did they look like? Do you mind my asking what he did? What his behaviour was?
So with him, there's lots of different things. One of the sort of most distressing things is a lot of repetitive physical behaviours. So he would like lick his lips repeatedly till they would go red and sore. He would shake his head repeatedly till he gave himself a stiff neck. And then I would say, you know, why are you doing that? And he'd say, well, I think if I don't, you'll die, mummy.
Oh.
Just so obviously heartbreaking. Also lots of fear around kind of germs and things generally. So he's very scared of other children vomiting. He's very scared of certain subjects at school. For example, he used to love ancient Egypt, and then they had a presentation at school about Egypt, and he learned about the idea of the curse of Tutankhamun, and then he was absolutely terrified of anything related to Egypt, wouldn't even touch money because he knew that money had originated in Egypt, things like this. So it caused a lot of issues at school. He was in a mainstream primary.
Right.
I'm one of the parents that's been through the whole battle of trying to get their child into a specialist school.
Did you have to get an EHCP?
I had to get an EHCP.
How long did that take?
The whole process took 4 years.
And how much money?
So luckily my parents were able to help me, and it cost £15,000.
But it's worked for the lad, has it?
And it nearly broke me. Yes, it did. He's going to a special school, and he's a lot happier and a lot better. But he does still have the OCD, and there's just really no support available in the NHS. I did go to my GP, who was amazing, but all she could say was, I'll refer you to CAMHS, which is MindWorks now.
Children, Adolescent, Health Services.
Yeah, and when I went there, they just said... I said, well, I've arranged some private OCD therapy for him, and I realise that means obviously you can't necessarily help him with therapeutic provision, but maybe there's other things you can do to support him.
Amy, we're already late, and I've got to get to headlines, but I want to ask you, what does the future look like for this 12-year-old boy?
I believe he's going to need really ongoing support, because I know that's going to be with him. It's just kind of how his mind works at the moment. So I do get disability living allowance for him, and I'm using that to pay for private OCD therapy, which I really hope will just help him to develop the skills to cope with that so it doesn't become something that stops him living a full life as an adult.
Wish him a very happy birthday. Thanks for sharing so much. Some challenges ahead with that, I think. Amy, and I know it's not your real name, good luck with the lab. More calls coming in on that. And also coming up after the news, we will at last get round to playing tribute to a singer who staged one of the greatest pop comebacks. What's the secret behind that line, giving off sparks and Total Eclipse of the Heart, the song that brought Bonnie Tyler back? I'll share the secrets with you after the 8:48, apologies, 8:48 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Tributes are being paid to the former MP and MEP, Anne Widdecombe, who's died at the age of 78. Andy Burnham says he's deeply grateful to the 322 Labour MPs who have so far nominated him to be the party's next leader and Prime Minister. And vapes could soon start being sold in plain packaging under government plans to stop them being marketed to children. LBC weather. Sunny and hot for most, spells of rain for the north of Scotland, a high of 35 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Two lanes are closed on the M25 anti-clockwise just after junction 27 at the M11. It's following an accident and it's slow from junction 28 at the A12. Also delays on the M25 for around half an hour clockwise up to junction 6 at Godston. Those emergency repair works earlier were taking place. Everything's open now, but it's left a delay from junction 4 at Orpington. Also delays continue on the M40 southbound to the M25 junction. The A40 remains closed westbound at the Marylebone Flyover. And there are queues on the North Circular Road eastbound to Wembley after an accident. On the Underground, there are severe delays on the Jubilee line and minor delays on the Victoria, Piccadilly and Metropolitan lines.
This is LBC.
A spectacle far beyond your imagination. Be amazed. Be moved. Be there. For an experience that will stay with you forever. Disney's The Lion King at London's Lyceum Theatre. Book now at thelionking.co.uk.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
You know how fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because sound is the most effective way to tell the players they're rubbish. Works in advertising too. Because when you amplify your advertising using radio, your campaign is 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Go all Irish to France with great low prices. With Irish Ferries, you can for less less. Irish Ferries, see you travel differently. T's and C's apply.
For whoever they want to be in life, give them a great start with Well Kid.
carefully balanced, great-tasting vitamins and minerals for 4 to 12-year-olds, with specific nutrients such as zinc and vitamin D, which support normal immune system function. The Well Kid range from Vitabiotics, from Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
Ballingdental.co.uk.
Guys, gals and non-binary pals, we're Copperfeel, the UK's only breast cancer awareness charity for young people. We educate people on the signs of breast cancer, as when found early, treatments are more effective and survival rates higher. This is your reminder to check your boobs, chest or pecs. Learn how at copperfeel.org.
Fever Tree Mediterranean Tonic Water. Who are you? Usually the mixer. The tea in G&T. But your delicate fragrance, hints of lemon thyme, when the tea's this good. Do you even need the G? Fever Tree, straight up or mixed. It's a matter of taste.
This is LBC. Message Nick Ferrari on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
And it's 8 minutes before nine. More of our conversation about OCD in a moment. Major stars coming forward to pay tribute to Bonnie Tyler, who's died age 75. That includes Sir Cliff Richard and Catherine Zeta-Jones, of course, a fellow Welsh person there. The singer behind songs such as Total Eclipse of the Heart, Lost in France, and Holding Out for a Hero was being treated in hospital in Portugal. But LBC's Wales correspondent, Bronwyn Weatherby, has been gathering reaction from Bonnie Tyler's hometown of Skewen in Neath.
Skewen in Neath, where Bonnie Tyler grew up, is today a town in mourning.
It's a heartache, nothing but a heartache.
Bonnie, known to those who knew her best as Gaynor Sullivan, died at the age of 75, leaving people here devastated.
I'm very saddened, because she's a big icon and she used to come from Skewen as well.
I mean, she was very down to earth even when she got huge. She used to come back to Skewen and put the Christmas lights on and she'd be very greatly missed.
It's sad, isn't it? It's a local girl. She always remembered her roots.
It's really sad, like, to lose such, like, a big name. It's like Skewen won't be the same.
One of six siblings, she was raised in a council house by a minor father, growing up with a love of music before being discovered by talent scout Roger Bell in a Swansea club. She shot to fame in the late 1970s with hit Lost in France, and within a decade, Total Eclipse of the Heart had made her a global star. Her unique husky voice leading her to be dubbed the female Rod Stewart.
Europe was such a big market for her. I think they sort of bought into her more quickly than us and America did as well, because they really went for that big hair rock thing in a big way. Let's not forget Wind of Change by the Scorpions and that sort of hair rock that was so big in Europe in the 1980s.
She went on to tour the world, be nominated three times for a Grammy, and remains the only Welsh artist to have a number one in the US, being named in the Queen's Last Birthday Honours List in 2022 for her services to music. But despite her continued success, in particular in Europe, friend and composer Mal Pope said she remained down to earth.
I'm heartbroken because she was incredibly generous to me, just as a friend and as a musician. She'd sing on my records, turn up to my shows. She was a very wealthy, successful woman. She didn't need my 100 quid in cash, right? That's who she was.
It was in May, while in Portugal, that she was admitted to hospital for emergency surgery and placed into an induced coma. She was expected to make a recovery, but sadly passed away on Wednesday night. Her family say they're heartbroken by her loss. Tributes have been pouring in from the worlds of politics and showbiz. Among them were Sir Rod Stewart, who said she was a good pal and true soul stirrer, while fellow Welsh star Catherine Zeta-Jones remembered her simply as Queen Bonnie. In a statement, Wales's first Minister Rhun Ap Iorwerth said Wales had lost a true icon.
There's nothing I can do, a total eclipse of the heart.
LBC's Wales correspondent Bronwyn Weatherby with that tribute there. A couple of things you probably never knew. That incredible Total Eclipse of the Heart, the backing band with members of Bruce Springsteen's E Street Band. Did you know that? And she used to perform at something called the Montreux Rock Festival in the 80s, mid-80s, and we all, was a showbiz reporter in the Sun, we all used to chase over there. All of us would get in an orderly queue to interview Bonnie. There'd be Duran Duran, there'd be Spandau, there'd be the Pet Shop Boys, there'd be, because she was such a great interview, such a down-to-earth woman. And I remember chatting, and she told me about the E Street Band, and I remember her saying she couldn't believe her luck. She really was one of the most grounded people you ever interviewed in that world. And obviously, condolences to her family and to everyone who knew her. Let's move on. Actually, we can move on by going back to our conversation about OCD I shared with you, that when I was doing my A-levels, so as a teenage, late teens, I was suffering from it. VJ said, you were switching lights on and off. It's surely assurance that if you did, you'd do well in your exams. It's a bit like sports people doing certain routines to make sure their game goes well. You don't have OCD, you're just like those sports people. Well, I don't think I'm quite at that level of sport, but... Suri in Watford, what can you tell me, Suri, about OCD? Or Suri, I'm sorry, Suri, good morning.
Suri, hi.
Suri,
Nick.
I'm sorry, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. This is really, really distressing to hear this morning because, I mean, it's literally something that I'm going through at the moment. I mean, I've had OCD on and off for 20 years, and my biggest concern is when I had my little boy 3 years ago, that it was going to impact me as a mum. I got really good
BBC. Does social media play a part, do you think, in your OCD at all, Suri?
I wouldn't say so. Well, not social media. As such, I mean, the one thing I realised through COVID is there is a big platform of OCD support
from
other people that actually understand, and you don't feel like you're the only one. So in that sense, it helped. But I think that the biggest thing for me was the CBT help that I got through the perinatal
Cognitive behaviour therapy, yeah.
Yes. And
how did that help? What did they do with you and what did it achieve?
Basically kind of talking through things and, you know, trying to make you understand that it's okay, you know, not to follow up these compulsions because they can be crippling. I mean, you know,
What is the behaviour that you do? What do you obsess over?
It's the germs and the, you know, constant hand washing. You know,
and you say you're a mum. How difficult, how much of a challenge was that when the baby came along?
It'd be things as though I'd be panicking that, you know, I'd be changing his nappy and he may have done a poo and then I'd spend ages washing my hands after. You know, you can't leave a baby.
No, of course you can't.
So, you know, little things like that, you know, knowing when they got older, you know, they'd be falling on the floor.
How old is your child or your children now?
He's 3 and a half now. Actually, this was the best CBT I ever had. I felt like I was finally myself again. I was able to parent. Taking him to soft play and, you know, allowing him to do the things that would have been really crippling to do before. Although, you know, it's definitely coming back again. And I think a lot of it is triggered by, you know, other stuff going on. You don't have the energy to fight the compulsions.
And also stress. Remember, stress is a massive factor. Look after yourself, Suri. Thank you. We'll go a minute late to news. Take one more call on this because a lot of people want to have their say and we need to reflect that. Michelle in Telford, you have it, do you? How long have you had it? Good morning.
Good morning. I'm 60 now and I've had this since I was about 7 and I know exactly how it started, which is why I rung, really.
How did it start?
Well, it started in my mind in the sense that I remember lying there. Honestly, it's a very, very real memory for me. I remember lying there and thinking, there is once, back is twice, so I'll do everything 2 times. So everything I would touch twice. Then I thought, here is once, there is twice, back is 3 times, everything was 3 times. Until then, what happened with my OCD, why I wanted to ring, was it evolves. So it changed from the number not being important to it just feeling right in your head. So you'd have to, say I put a cup down, I'd keep tapping it, lights on and off, like you said, trousers on and off, my jeans on and off.
Oh, no, I never got that badly, no.
Yeah, and in the end, it's not the number that becomes important, it's how it feels in your head, because if you don't do it right, something's going to happen to somebody, a car accident, or somebody's going to die.
But it doesn't work like that, Michelle.
Well, I know. This is a stupid thing about it.
Well, no, let's use the word stupid, because I don't want to seem, you know, judgmental.
This is the crazy thing about it, then. I know, logically, because I'm not a, you know, I'm a logical person, I know that isn't going to make it happen, but in my head, if it did, I would feel it was my fault. And I've had that all my life. I've never had treatment. It's even in your dreams. When you have a dream, you're still doing those things at night, but it just changes, you know, it evolves, the OCD. It's never going to go away. When I was a child, nobody knew what it was. My mom thought I was, to use the word, I have to use it, because she thought I was just crazy. She couldn't understand it. People, other neighbours were saying, what's she doing? She's walking, and then she goes back and she taps.
I've got to get to news. Just lastly, in a sentence, how debilitating, you've had it for more than 50 years, how debilitating has it been?
It doesn't stop me working or anything. Right. There was no social media then. The only thing I would have said about that social media thing is pretty much everybody's on it. So how can they say, do you know what I mean? It's hard to say whether
what the actual influencing factors are. Michelle, I'm glad we got your story in, but we must get our skates on because we're running a little bit late. And thank you for that. Be well. Coming up after news, back to what we heard from Health Secretary James Murray about cracking down on the use of vapes by young people.
Think of all the impact that nicotine addiction has on their brains, on their mental health, on their attention span, on their sleeping habits. Yes. You know, it's not good.
Getting ready for the big kickoff tomorrow night, and also hot in the city and hot in the whole of the country, as now in some operating theatres, some procedures are having to be halted, delayed and postponed. We'll figure out how the country's coping after the 9 o'clock news here on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, tributes being paid to the former MP and MEP Anne Widdecombe, who's died at the age of 78. She served as a Conservative MP for 23 years before becoming a Brexit Party member of the European Parliament. She most recently served as Reform UK's Justice and Immigration spokesperson. The former Culture Secretary Nadine Dorries has told Nick Ferrari at breakfast she made a major contribution to British politics.
I worked with her in Parliament, and, you know, I know she was on Strictly, Brother and all the things that the public loved her for and got to know her well for. But, you know, she was the one thing I would say that maybe gets overlooked is what a formidable parliamentarian she was. Anne gave barnstorming speeches. When she stood in the Commons to speak, everybody listened. She was a doughty campaigner on some of the most serious issues of the day.
Andy Burnham says he's deeply grateful to the 322 Labour MPs who have so far nominated him to be the party's next leader and Prime Minister. He's now only one short of the number of MPs needed to ensure that no one else can enter the contest. Labour MPs have until next Wednesday to express a preference. At least 11 people have died following a wildfire in a popular tourist hotspot in southern Spain. Local officials in the Andalusia region say four of the victims could be British. Around 150 firefighters are working to bring the fires under control. Vapes could soon start being sold in plain packaging under government plans to stop them being marketed to children. The UK-wide proposals could also introduce restrictions on flavour descriptions. A 12-week consultation is now underway. And the Deputy Commissioner of Britain's biggest police force has admitted to LBC that plans are being put in place should England win the World Cup. Earlier this week, the Prime Minister hinted there could be an extra bank holiday if the Three Lions win the tournament. Deputy Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police, Matt Jukes, has told Nick Ferrari at breakfast, planning for a potential victory parade is underway.
We are definitely thinking about what the very best outcomes could mean, and we hope we're going to be alongside the rest of England in celebrating that in a few weeks' time.
So there is some poor man or woman who's already plotting where that parade, if we get that far, some team is already working on that.
Yeah, while everyone else is watching the results and wondering what will happen, there are people who are locked in rooms imagining what that'll be like. We saw a really big, lively, and at a couple of points problematic parade after Arsenal's victory, so we know what to get ready for.
England play Norway in the quarterfinals tomorrow night. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 10 at 10,482. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.17. LBC weather, sunny and hot for many. Spells of rain for the north of Scotland, a high today of 35 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Hey Sainsbury's, any way you can save me a few quid on my weekly shop?
Well, Jane, try Your Nectar Prices. Every week in Your Nectar app, you can unlock up to 10 personalised discounts on things you love at Sainsbury's. A Janesbury's, if you will.
Sounds like my kind of place.
get personalised discounts with your Nectar prices. That's good food for all of us. Sainsbury's. 18 plus Nectar app required. Unlock up to 10 your Nectar prices weekly. Available in supermarkets, online and in locals with Smart Shop. T&Cs apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 6 minutes after nine on Friday, July the 10th. A crackdown on vaping. Vapes will be sold in plain packages to make them less appealing to children. The plain truth from the government. But will it work? Staying with health matters, Health Secretary James Murray spoke to me earlier in the show about temperatures in hospitals.
We don't want operations to be impacted by the heat. You know, mobile air conditioning units, ventilation, fans are important.
Well, is that as good as we can do? Operations are being affected. Some are even being postponed or even halted, according to one report. So how are we coping with that heat dome? In other news, we'll come back to that story with the extraordinary comments from the leader of Restore Britain political party, Rupert Lowe, speaking on the Joe Rogan Experience podcast.
As you probably know, they banned handguns
the 90s, right?
In the late 90s, because there was a murder up in Dunblane.
One murder.
No, there wasn't. There were 16 young children lost their lives, and a teacher as well. Still no apology from that ignorant oaf. And looking ahead for tomorrow for the big kickoff, will it be a national celebration, as in a United Kingdom?
Are there any Scots supporting England against Norway this weekend? I'm LBC's Alan Zizinski on the streets of Glasgow trying to find out.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Great Scott, can we rely on any support from the folk of Glasgow? Stay tuned. I'm going to guess I wouldn't hold my breath. I genuinely don't know how it's turned out, but suppose it was time of the evening we went out on the streets. Anyway, we'll play that report in a little bit later. If you're listening the first hour, you heard about the government. They're trying to make it plain over plain packaging on vapes. They must be sold in that packaging to make them less appealing to children. E-cigarettes will only be white, black or grey, be kept out of sight in shops and have more basic flavour descriptions. This was the troubling figures that I mentioned to the health secretary. One in five 11 to 17 year olds have tried vaping. 11 to 17 year olds. It's not legal till you're 18. So I asked the health secretary, James Murray, to expand on the idea of this plain packaging drive.
No, it is a great concern to us, and that's why we're launching our consultation today about implementing some changes, which will mean that vapes and vaping products can no longer be targeted and promoted to young people. And what this involves is things like removing the colourful packaging, putting it in just plain white packaging with text on it, making sure the vapes themselves are not colourful, they're just black or white or grey, and removing the promotion from the front of the counter, so it's behind the counter, in the way that cigarettes are, where at the moment, if you're buying a pack of cigarettes, you have to ask the shopkeeper to get it for you, making it more equivalent to that. And as you said, Nick, you know, there's about a million 11 to 17 year olds last year tried vaping. You know, it's not good for kids to be addicted to nicotine. It has a real impact on them, and we think this is a really important way of making sure they're not promoted to young people.
Well, your action is to be welcome, but can I put it to you, why consultation? Because my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, I normally am, you have to be 18 to buy these products, so why do we need to consult over the Secretary of State? Why don't you just effectively mandate it?
Well, the reason why we're doing the consultation is because as a result of these changes, businesses will have to adapt. And so it's fair for us to ask businesses and others their views, so we make sure the implementation is done in the right way. But look, the support for this amongst parents is overwhelming. I think it's the right thing to do. You know, we want to make sure this happens, which is why we're getting on with this consultation now, so that we can bring this into place as soon as possible. Because, you know, at the moment, I think everyone knows that experience of seeing the way that vapes are promoted with colourful posters with names like cotton candy,
yes,
when it's talking about
pink lemonade and watermelon. I mean, these are rather, yeah, dubious marketing aims, I would put to you, Secretary.
Well,
of State.
I would say it's pretty clear what the marketing aims there are, which is focused on children and young people. Because, you know, if you're an adult thinking about going from smoking to vaping, which is a good thing, by the way, you know, to quit
that's something
smoking,
you support, of course, to bring you to, yeah, try and ease off the nicotine input, presumably.
Exactly, and it's good if adults switch from cigarettes to vaping. I think if you're an adult in that situation, you'd have thought it through. You'll go into a shop and you can ask for a vape. You're not going to be an adult smoker and suddenly see, oh, cotton candy, and that's what switches you. Do you know what I mean? Like, it is pretty clear what's happening here in the way it's being promoted. And you can see in the stats, there's, you know, a million 11 to 17-year-olds vaped last year. And think of all the impact that nicotine addiction has on their, you know, on their brains, on their mental health, on their attention span, on their sleeping habits. Yes. You know, it's not good.
Well, I'm about to... We'll bring someone, a senior member of ASH, the group that prompted our conversation, Action on Smoking Health. But I just want to ask you, I'm very, very lucky. I've never really smoked cigarettes. Can you imagine? Well, I'd be dead, actually, if I did. I mean, my body wouldn't have taken it. So I don't really get the excitement of vaping. But when you go down high streets now, so many stores are vaping. So are you vaping? And how do you try and ensure that this obviously doesn't spread to children? Reminding you, it's 18. Caroline Cerny is Deputy Chief Executive of ASH, Action on Smoking and Health. You heard a bit of detail there from the relevant Secretary of State, the Health Secretary. How impactful do you think this is likely to be in this? Good morning.
Good morning. So I think it's got a very good chance. We know from action that's been taking on tobacco over the past decades that when you bring in policies that restrict branding, that standardise packaging, you're taking away kind of the marketing power of these businesses. And the marketing of vapes has really got out of hand in the past decade or so. You know, we've heard just from the Health Secretary about, you know, these bright colours, these enticing names. You know, we see vapes that look like toys, that look like sweets. So it's no wonder that children think that they're for them. Making them boring, reclaiming them as the smoking cessation tool that they are, you know, we think it's got a really good chance of putting children and putting teenagers off these products.
I had no idea they're being manufactured as toys. That really is rather sickening. But what I was concerned with the Health Secretary, I don't know why it needs a 12-week consultation. This is an illegal practice. Can I put it to you that they've got the right idea, but they should be moving a little swifter?
I mean, most government kind of big measures like this require a consultation, sometimes for legal reasons as well. You know, we're expecting a pushback, you know, from the tobacco industry, from the nicotine industry. The government need to make sure they follow due process, so they're in a good strong legal position to bring in these changes. It can all happen very rapidly once that consultation period is over.
Broadly speaking, what is the ASH, Action on Smoking and Health, position towards vaping for adults? Is it seen as a useful tool? Does it actually give additional cause for concerns? Where exactly are you and where is the organisation, Caroline?
Vaping is a great smoking cessation tool. We've seen millions of adult smokers have quit smoking very successfully using vapes over the past 5 years. They're not harm-free, but they are much, much less harmful than smoking. And I do think, you know, with all the concern about vaping, we have lost sight, really, of how deadly smoking is. You know, out of long-term smokers, two-thirds of them will die from a disease related to smoking. And we've got a problem now that lots of people think that vapes are as bad or even worse than smoking. And while they're not risk-free, you know, they are much, much less harmful than smoking. So what we don't want is adults who do smoke to think, oh, well, you know, I'll stick with the cigarettes then because, you know, these vapes are just as bad. That really isn't the case. And vapes are not the only way to stop smoking, I should say, as well. There's some very effective other nicotine products or even treatments.
For this to work, of course, we're going to need the retailers to be on board. Lastly, your organisation, ASH, can do as much as it wants. You can lobby successfully the government and ministers. But if these people are still selling these products to children, there's not a lot you can do. How responsible are the retailers in some instances?
Yeah, so I think we will see some more changes. I mean, it's not part of this consultation, but the government's also proposing a licensing scheme. So at the moment, any business can sell vapes, and we see them on sale in hairdressers, in butchers, you know, all kinds of businesses. So new laws that will come in due course will require businesses to have a license to sell vapes. And they also need to put the vapes out of sight behind the counter, which is a fairly big undertaking for a retail environment, and also fairly easy for trading stands then to see whether that's happening or not happening.
Caroline Cerny, thank you. You're Deputy Chief Executive of Action on Smoking and Health. Love to hear your success story that you were smoking 10 a day, 15, 20, I don't know, 20 a day, and you used it as a what's called cessation tool. But what about the ease? And perhaps you have concerns that you think your child or your children are actually vaping underage and the impact. Plain message about plain packaging from the government, but will it work? And also after the news. You, but it seemed even hotter last night than before. This now, as some hospitals are having to delay or even halt surgery. particularly if you work in the NHS, if you're a nurse, if you're a consultant, if you're bottom of the admin team. How well equipped or otherwise are our hospitals? We'll patrol the wards after this. 9.15 LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Tributes are being paid to the former MP and MEP, Anne Withercombe, who's died at the age of 78. Andy Burnham says he's deeply grateful to the 322 Labour MPs who have so far nominated him to be the party's next leader and Prime Minister. And vapes could soon start being sold in plain packaging under government plans to stop them being marketed to children. LBC weather. Sunny and hot for most, spells of rain for the north of Scotland, a high of 35 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Two lanes are closed on the M25 anti-clockwise just after junction 27 at the M11. It's following an accident. Those delays back to junction 28 at the A12, but surrounding routes, especially at the Wake Arms roundabout, are hardly moving at all. Elsewhere on the M25, it's very busy anti-clockwise from junction 17 at Maple Cross to 16 at the M40. And that was after an accident that happened earlier, but all the lanes are now back open. Also, the problems on the M40 continue as well. Southbound at the M25 junction, emergency works are taking place, so that's causing queues. Delays on the North Circular Road eastbound to Wembley after an accident. And on the underground, there are severe delays on the Jubilee line.
This is LBC.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had two kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
Yep, I'm still dancing. And there's still time to get in tonight's EuroMillions draw. So turn up that dial.
The EuroMillions jackpot is £24 million.
EuroMillions from the National Lottery. It could be you.
Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
Guys, gals and non-binary pals, we're Copperfeel, the breast cancer awareness charity. This is your reminder to check your chest. Learn how at copperfeel.org.
Want a simple way to earn a fixed monthly income? At ULEZ Prosperity, you buy a ULEZ compliant vehicle from us, rent it back to us for a fixed monthly income, and at the end of the term, we buy it back from you at a fixed agreed price. We manage the vehicle, driver and operations. You simply receive the monthly income. Buy, rent, sell. It's that simple. Get conditions at ulezprosperity.com. Earn a steady monthly income at ulezprosperity.com.
When you're watching the match in bed, when you're streaming a game on your commute, when you just have to catch all the action.
Come on, come on.
Go! Oops, sorry.
Who cares? What's a spilt coffee after a goal like that?
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And a TV licence covers you to watch all TV channels, including live TV on streaming services, so you can cheer along no matter what time you're watching the football. Search TV licence together.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
The extraordinary popularity of vapes and vaping. Sunita, I'll be with you in just a moment. Les in Essex says changing the colour and packaging on vapes is a step forward, but who are selling the children the vapes and where are they getting the money from? That's something I talked to that representative of the charity about. Alison in Broxbourne, once again, action and legislation is late to the party. Kids and adults are hooked on vapes, social media, cigarettes, nitrous oxide, not to mention also cannabis and alcohol. Lastly, Pamela tells us, the last time I bought vape juice online, it came with a small packet of Twizzle sweets in the package. Good gracious. Sunita's in Aberdeen. Are you a vapor?
I am. Hi, Nick.
Hello.
Yes, I am.
Why did you take it up?
Right. I smoked for 35 years, and I really knew I had to give up. And there's a lot of pressure now, obviously, with you not being able to smoke everywhere.
And how many would you, on a typical day, how many would you...
20.
How many?
You smoked without a doubt.
20 cigarettes a day for 35 years?
Without a doubt, yes.
Crikey.
I did, yes. Certainly the last 10 years, 15 years of that, definitely.
Gosh. Right, okay.
And I don't think I could have given up without the vaping, with that coming out. When it came out, I left it for a while to see what people were saying about it. Didn't join into it until probably about July last year.
Mm-hmm.
But it got me off them, got me off the cigarette straight away. I really needed it and I enjoy it. But I would like to come off it now. I don't want to be one of these 10-year people that are, you know, just using it instead of smoking. I want to come off it as well. But when I went,
I know there's no measure for this, so it's a bit of a dopey question, but once you were on the vaping, how easy was it to give up on cigarettes?
Literally, the first 2 days, I smoked less cigarettes and started vaping.
Right, extraordinary.
And then on the third day, I started no cigarettes.
Wow. And what about the difference in... Sorry, how long ago was this you did this, did you say?
This has been since like July last year.
Oh, right. So what were you spending a week or a month on cigarettes? Just roughly speaking, would you say?
£15 a day.
£15 a day?
Yeah.
And have you worked out how much a vaping costs you a day or a week or have
I would say it's cost me about £20 at the most, between 10. But I think...
Well, hang on, a day? You spend 10 pence a day?
No, a week.
Oh, my God, you've gone from £15 a day to just around 10 or 20 quid a week?
Yes, definitely.
Wow.
Absolutely, definitely. And the other thing, Nick, that I do buy a 10 milligram, because you get 20 milligram or 10. Mm. I'm now down to a 10 from a 20, but I buy a 0% nicotine as well. So during the day, I go between my 10 milligrams and my 0 milligrams. Because I don't want to stay on them.
Come on, what's the battle plan? How do you think you might get rid of when would you hope to possibly be off the vapes?
Really, a while ago I gave myself till June, but then I just couldn't do it. I tried and I couldn't do it. I was trying to do the zero, just the zero, and it couldn't do it. I went to the local pharmacy where they helped me give up smoking, and they said, "I'm sorry, we don't actually help you give up vaping." I would have liked that. So if when you give up smoking to the pharmacy, you go in every week, you talk to them, they ask you how many cigarettes you've had and what's your plan. I would have liked that for vaping. That would help me. That would really help me. Somewhere to go and, like, sign into, so you know you're going there and you don't want to sound disappointed or be disappointment.
Good luck. What a great story. Sunita, congratulations to you. Chris, you're going to tell me how vaping has helped you in a moment, but let's come back to a story we did discuss with the heatwave, and my goodness, wasn't it hot last night, and the impact it's having on our health service. Surgeons breaking off operations midway after becoming overwhelmed by the heatwave, medical leaders are claiming, something I put to the Health Secretary, James Murray, in the first hour of the show.
Heat is having a big impact on the health service. Let me just start by saying a big thank you to all NHS staff for carrying on going during the heat wave, keeping the services by and large going as they should be and helping patients. But there's no doubt that it has an impact. And I was at Watford General Hospital yesterday talking to them about a range of issues, but including how they're responding to the heat wave. And what happens is that each individual hospital or trust will have their own bespoke plan about how to respond to the heat wave. But that usually includes things like putting in extra air conditioning units, ventilation fans in areas where there's particularly high heat.
I think we need these mobile air conditioning units, don't we, if we can get our hands on them. And certainly, I don't know what the temperature is in an operating theatre. I don't know whether it's going to be hot or whether it's going to be cold, but we don't really want operations having to be effectively postponed or halted.
You're absolutely right. We don't want operations to be impacted by the heat. And you're also right to say that, you know, mobile air conditioning units, ventilation, fans are important. But the critical thing here is to keep the NHS going rather than us taking a setback every time we have a heat wave.
Well, let's talk about keeping the NHS going. Dr. Peter Carter was Chief Executive of the Royal College of Nursing, now an independent healthcare consultant. How critical or otherwise is the health service at this time with these extraordinary pressures of the weather? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Look, it's not in good shape. This really illustrates just how fragile parts of our NHS really is. A&E departments are bearing the brunt of this, but hospitals, like many buildings, are just not equipped to cope with these temperatures. And what the government is going to have to do, because this is here to stay, as far as we can see, is to start getting some serious capital into the NHS to get operating theatres and wards and other departments properly equipped to cope with these extreme temperatures, which, as I said, look like they're going to be with us for the foreseeable future.
The Health Secretary says £6.75 billion over the coming years. When you consider the size of the NHS, what's called a state, that's probably not going to be a lot to go round, is it?
It's not, Nick, and remember, the estate is not in good shape as we speak. Irrespective of the heat wave, you've got hospitals like the one out in Norfolk has got 8,000 props holding up the ceilings, 8,000. And so there's been underinvestment over the years, and now the chickens are coming home to roost. And the heat wave has really exacerbated what was already a pretty difficult situation. The other factor, of course, is that we have a significant proportion of the nation that are not in good health at the best of times. And once you get extreme temperatures, that, again, makes a bad situation even worse, particularly people with chronic conditions such as respiratory disease.
I'm getting reports, and I won't name the hospital, but there's a hospital in London where people have just been texting me saying the heating is still on. They've not switched off the radiators. They're saying there's problems with the boilers. I see you vigorously nodding, Peter. I was going to say, A, can you believe it? Obviously, not only do you believe it, Peter, you might even know the don't name it if you do, but is this a real possibility?
Nick, I was talking about this for years.
They've got the radiators on in a hospital now.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And during the night, you find some outpatient departments have still got the lights on and there's televisions going and people can't switch them off. There are real challenges in some hospitals. Now, just to be clear, some hospitals are really well managed and well run. But in this day and age, to have heating on during this situation, to have lights and televisions on all during the night, it really is unacceptable.
Peter, thanks for your time. Dr. Peter Carter, you were Chief Executive of the Royal College of Nursing. You're now an independent healthcare consultant. If you are working in a hospital battling, now be very careful, and my colleagues will talk you through it. If you name the hospital, you just give us a world of pain, and we don't really give us enough time to turn around a call. So if you could say, look, I work in a hospital in London, or I work in a hospital in Kent, or I work in a hospital in, I don't know, Leicestershire or wherever, we'll take your calls on that. If you're working in a hospital, the radiators are on. Oh, my God. Chris is in Lincoln. We're talking vaping. Have you managed to stop smoking, Curtis? Of vaping. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes and no.
I love that question. Answer. Go on, tell me that. Go on.
So I'm a 37-year smoker. I started at the age of 13 when cigarettes were all colourful packages, but just started because it was cool, not any other reason. I've turned to vaping in about the last 3 weeks, so I started vaping.
Oh, right. Really recently, then?
Yeah, recently. I lost my father earlier this year. Various illnesses.
How old was Dad?
He was 82.
Right.
His birthday.
Oh, sorry.
But he'd always said to me, you need to stop smoking, you need to stop smoking, you need to stop smoking. And so I made that decision to try and stop smoking. So I have now turned to vapes. But I'll go into a shop.
How many a day were you doing, sir?
30 plus. So a lot.
Mate. You know how bad they are for you, don't you?
What, cigarette?
Yeah.
I do. Even in 3 weeks of vaping, so I'm struggling to get off the morning cigarettes. I'll have one cigarette in the morning.
Okay.
And then I vape the rest of the time.
Hang on, are you down to one a day?
One a day, yeah.
Oh, that's a tremendous start, Chris.
I think I'm doing quite well.
I think you're doing brilliantly.
But I've noticed the difference myself. A massive difference in just 3 weeks in my breathing, in coughing, anything like that.
What do you
mean,
going upstairs or whatever, something like that? Is that much easier, is it?
It's just general talking with people as well. When I would talk to people, because I was a smoker, I'd get out of breath, I'd start to sort of cough or just sort of have to clear my throat a lot.
What do you think about these manufacturers who obviously target children with this, though, Chris, with bubblegum flavour and watermelon flavour and all of this?
Well, I've literally been to the shop this morning because I don't... Because I'm new to vaping, I don't know what flavour I want. I don't know what I'm after.
What you like,
So I literally went to the shop this morning, and I've got two products in front of me, which is watermelon ice, which is like a menthol ice, a menthol watermelon, and a blueberry raspberry.
Why are you going for such sweet flavour? I'm not, you know, you're perfectly entitled to go whatever flavour you like, but I just wonder why you're going for such sweet flavours.
I'm trying to go for a flavour that I like, that I will stick with, if I get something, I don't like the taste of it. So I got one, which was a strawberry, disliked it. But just being able to go into the shop and look at what I want, look at the flavours and go, right, I want to try that and see if that's going to be any good for me. I want to try that. Yeah, so the raspberry's quite a sour flavour. I've had it before and it's relatively nice. The watermelon, no idea, not tried it.
Let us know how you get on. That's a sensational start. To drop from 30 a day to one, I think that's amazing. And obviously you're doing it for your poor dad as well. Best wishes to him, to you, of course, getting over that. Another Chris the Second, you'll be the next caller on this. Can we do it the other side of the news? When we'll also be talking about a politician who bets about as low as you can imagine.
As you probably know, they banned handguns.
The 90s, right?
In the late 90s, because there was a murder up in Dunblane.
One murder.
No, there wasn't. There were a series of murders. There's one thing to be ignorant. It's another thing to be idiotic and not put the record straight. And we'll come back to that after this. 9:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC News Time. Dominic Ellis.
Tributes are being paid to the former minister, MP and MEP, Anne Widdecombe, who's died at the age of 78. She was a leading figure on the right of British politics for decades and a staunch supporter of the UK's departure from the EU. Spanish officials say at least 11 people have died in a wildfire in the southern province of Almeria. Local officials say four of the victims are believed to be British. And vapes could soon start being sold in plain packaging under government plans to stop them being marketed to children. The UK-wide proposals could also introduce restrictions on flavour descriptions. LBC weather sunny and hot for most, spells of rain for the north of Scotland, a high of 35 degrees.
This is LBC.
A message from TfL.
I saw Alicia's photo in my newsfeed. All I can think of is her family. How they're getting on. If they're getting on. I didn't look when I pulled out, and she never made it home. Sounds crazy, but it felt like her motorbike came out of nowhere. But I know the truth. I didn't look again.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
When you're smiling.
Don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling and the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
This September, the world's top tennis players return to London for the 9th edition of the Laver Cup. From the 25th to the 27th, Team Europe face off against Team World at one of the capital's most iconic venues, the O2. It's your chance to see the biggest names, including Carlos Alcaraz, Alexander Zverev and Ben Shelton, with more to be announced. Get your tickets for an unforgettable weekend of tennis at lbc.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345-6060-973.
Just want to come to you, Chris, about vaping. Need to tell you, of course, we come to the end of special guest presenter week here when I leave at 10, and I don't want to be unjust to Jenrick or rude to Rayner, but I've got to be honest, I've been looking forward to today.
Goodness me, what are we up to? Were you turning on that? You turning on this? I've lost count, I don't even know what... I don't read the Parliamentary Labour Party briefs. I stopped reading them 10 minutes after I was elected in May 2010. But I tell you what, if I was, I'd be spinning round in circles. I don't know where we are. Well, just deliver what we said we're going to do in the manifesto and stop picking things from daftness, of the daftest daftness you've ever heard in your life.
I just hope he gets off the fence. Having presented a show like this for a few years, I have to warn Carl Turner, King Carl, the suspended Labour MP for East Hull. You've got to get your opinions out there, Carl. He's going to be with you in just over 25 minutes or so time. We're going to be talking about his outrageous comments, as low as you can get from politician Rupert Lowe. But we're celebrating in a part vaping while keeping an eye on the concern of children. The shocking news that was it one in five, yes, 20%, of children are done by that organisation, ASH. Children 11 through 17 have tried vaping. It's illegal. The government's saying they're going to consult, what's to consult, on plain paper packaging. But let's talk about the impact for adults and some pretty positive stories. Chris in Redcar, what's yours? Good morning.
Hi there, Nick, how are you doing?
Good, thank you. I want to hear your success story.
So, in terms of the concern I have... in terms of the packaging laws that are coming out and the flavour restriction laws, is I believe that that's tackling the symptoms of the problem and not the cause, the illness itself.
Mm-hmm.
If you turn every package into a grey package and you start labelling flavours as basic labels, that's not going to stop the wave of dodgy shops selling those things to children. It's not. You've got, on my high street alone, you have better government legislation, the ability to actually close shops down permanently and prevent them from opening. There is nothing stopping right now in law a vape shop opening next to me, and then in the unit next to me after that. You could have 15 on the same street, nothing stops it. And people know that. And when they get caught, when training standards catch them, they often get closed for 30 days or they get a slap on the wrist. It's too lenient. So it doesn't matter what you do in terms of packaging it. I understand what the aim is I understand what the government's aim is for that. But it doesn't tackle the symptom itself, and that is that people will still buy them on the black market. There are shops on this high street that sell the liquids for cheaper than it costs me to buy them wholesale.
Because how are they doing that then? Sorry, where are they getting them?
They're fake. It's fake versions of the same. Yeah, they're fake. So I won't name the brand, but I had a representative from a well-known brand. He comes into my store all the time.
And yours is a general store or a vape store?
Mine's a vape store.
Yours is a vape specialty store.
Specialised vape store, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. And he came in and he said, I've been into five stores in this area so far today. I've purchased one of our liquids from each of those stores and three of them are fake.
Right.
So, you know, if the government decides, right...
Well, they could be putting anything in that liquid then.
Exactly, they could. So under what you call TPD, Tobacco Products Directive legislation, e-liquids in this country, when they are, lawfully liquids, can only contain a certain amount of ingredient A, B, C, D, and E. You can't deviate from that.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're buying a legitimate product off a store, from a reputable vape store, you know that what you're getting is a product that has all of the ingredients in mandated by the TPD. If you buy a fake one, yeah, there could be literally anything in that. Literally anything. And there's not... And I try and explain that to customers who... Because there are customers who come in and they say, you know, you're selling it for this price. Down the road, it's...
Yeah, sure.
And I'm like, well, what do you want to do? Do you want to save a bit of money and risk your health even more than you already are? Or do you want to buy something that is regulated by the Tobacco Products Directive? The point I'm getting at is that all these little tweaks to the system, such as packaging and things, not that I'm saying I oppose those things. Mm. What I'm saying is they won't solve the long-term problem of people buying them on the black market.
Let me ask you lastly, as someone who's in this line with a store that specialises, how is business and your reaction to what the government is going to consult on? You're the sort of person who they would want to hear from. Answer those two, if you would, Chris.
So business is okay. It gets more challenging every year as the belt gets more restrictive on vaping, and I understand why it's happening. But what I think the government needs to do, and needs to be very careful of doing, is not killing the industry, killing shops like mine, because all you'll do at that point is drive sales underground. It needs to be managed in a way that, yes, prevents children from being able to purchase them, but doesn't make it impossible for me to trade at the same time.
Thanks for all your input. And thanks for being a responsible trader. People like you, Chris, are helping some of my callers get down, or another Chris, actually, get down from 30 cigarettes to one cigarette a day. We'll move on. Mike says, I prosecute vape cases for local council trading standards. They're imported from China. They're carcinogenic. It's organised crime and rife in certain communities. Some Kurdish communities in certain parts of the UK are using them. All right, we'll come back to that conversation. But we'll move on by coming back to a story we covered in the first hour. Rupert Lowe making these insensitive and offensive comments on a podcast.
As you probably know, they banned handguns...
The 90s, right?
In the late 90s, because there was a murder up in Dunblane.
One murder.
So everybody... My father used to shoot pistols for Oxford University, and he had... He's dead now, bless him, but he had... All his pistols were taken away. The pistols he used to shoot with at Oxford University.
Wrong on just about every account, speaking with Joe Rogan there. It was 1996... No one would describe 1996 as late 90s. Amid more importantly, far more importantly, 16 children and one teacher lost their lives in that horrific event. Understandably now, relatives of children and survivors are furious with Lowe, who, as I speak now, and someone will soon call him if I'm wrong, still no retraction, apology, clarification or anything. Shall we turn to Reverend Colin Renwick, who's minister of Dunblane Cathedral and joins me now. Thank you for coming on, sir. I can't imagine how a community ever come to terms with the evil that was visited upon it not that many years ago. But comments as crass and insensitive as this from a supposedly leading politician, what did it do to the people of the area? Good morning to you.
Good morning. Well, the people of Dunblane to whom I've spoken since that interview with Rupert Lowe, I've just found it deeply offensive and breathtaking in its insensitivity and ignorance. I think for a British politician to dismiss the killing of 16 children and a teacher in Dunblane and the injuring of others as a single murder is breathtaking in its ignorance.
What would your congregation want to hear from this politician, Minister?
I think they would want a very full-hearted apology for the way in which he's written off 16 deaths in such an insensitive and casual way. It's breathtaking. And I think they would look for an apology, although in many ways I think he is an irrelevance in Dunblane. The voting record of the constituency is one that they would not be voting for Rupert Lowe in all probability. But I think they would look for a very wholehearted apology.
How does an area, a town, a city, visited with a tragedy on this scale, how does it ever come to terms with that?
I think there are people in Dunblane, obviously, and most obviously the families of those who were killed, who will never be the same again. Every day of their life, they will remember the children they lost. And there are some who still bear on their bodies the physical scars, as well as emotional scars in their minds. But the community has moved on, and I think one of the ways in which the community has moved on is the Snowdrop campaign to have the gun laws changed. I think it's given the people of Dunblane some comfort and satisfaction even that out of that tragedy a campaign arose that has made Britain a safer place, that has, thank goodness, never been a repeat of that shooting within the United Kingdom. So I think that has helped the community, and people who fought that campaign did so at no small personal cost, and they did it with great determination and great credibility. But yes, Dunblane will never forget, although the community has in many ways moved on. And there are many people now living in Dunblane who weren't living in Dunblane at the time of the tragedy. But when I first came here, people still, and it was after the tragedy, people still were reluctant to tell people on holiday, for example, that they came from Dunblane. They'd simply say they came from a town near Stirling, because immediately people spoke about the tragedy, and it was really too painful for them to speak about. Now they tend to associate it more with Jamie and Andy Murray, which is a good thing.
And lastly, how does a faith, Christian faith or any other, how does a faith help the relatives, the survivors, come to terms with what they endured?
I can only speak as a Christian, although I obviously have respect for other faith traditions too. And it did bring all the Christian denominations within Dunblane together. How does a faith help? I think it helps some people in the conviction that those they've lost are not lost forever. There is in Christ a life beyond this one. It also helps, I think, in that it draws together a community of people who are compassionate and understanding and seek to do whatever they can to help. And I know there are members of all the congregations in Dunblane, because the cathedral is but one of them, who have done a great deal to support those living with the sense of loss and trauma that followed the tragedy in 1996.
Grateful for your time. Thanks, sir. Reverend Colin Renwick is Minister of Dunblane Cathedral. Just to remind you, of course, private ownership of handguns was banned in the United Kingdom after Dunblane, giving the country some of the strictest firearms legislation in the world. There's not been a single school shooting in the United Kingdom since 1996. In the United States, they've had more than 400 over that time period. This is what you're saying on social media and on the text. Adam in Dunfermline, which is also in Scotland. Whether Rupert Lowe meant one murder or one massacre is irrelevant. The fact he belittled such a tragic incident while preaching to a predominantly US, mostly pro-gun audience and was moaning because Daddy lost his guns, it was disgusting. Martin says the Rupert Lowe situation somewhat misses the point, because even if he had conveyed it as one massacre or one incident, the underlying point is that he was litigating for reduction in gun controls in the UK, which is a ghastly and inappropriate position. We might come back to that. Definitely calls coming in on vaping. Lisa, Max, we're going to be talking to you about those. And also getting ready for the big kickoff after the news.
Are there any Scots supporting England against Norway this weekend? I'm LBC's Alan Zizinski on the streets of Glasgow trying to find out.
Great Scots, do we have any Scottish fans who will be pulling for England. We'll look at that in a moment. 9.45, LBC News headlines from Dominic Ellis.
Tributes are being paid to the former Minister, MP and MEP, Anne Widdecombe, who's died at the age of 78. Spanish officials say at least 11 people have died in a wildfire in the southern province of Almeria. And vapes could soon start being sold in plain packaging under government plans to stop them being marketed to children. LBC weather, sunny and hot for many. Spells of rain for the north of Scotland. A high of 35 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M25 anti-clockwise at junction 27 at the M11. There was an accident. Everything's just reopened, but it's still very slow and it's also very busy still on the surrounding routes, especially through Epping Forest. The M25 is busy anti-clockwise at junction 16 at the M40 after an accident, but all the lanes are now back open. Problems in Elmers End in Beckenham. The Croydon Road is closed westbound for some emergency works and that's causing delays. And in Shirley Oaks, the Shirley Roads had to be closed both ways, but that's after an accident. On the underground, there are severe delays on the Bakerloo and Jubilee lines, and also delays on East Midlands Railway services to and from St Pancras because of the hot weather.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, Carl Turner.
The MP for Merkerfield, Andy Burnham, is about to sneak into Downing Street and become the Prime Minister. Do you think he's going to do a better job than Keir Starmer?
Carl Turner at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
When your husband's got his heart set on making the doer-upper open plan, enjoy every thudding second of it.
Yes!
Be a step ahead with Barclays Premier, with our exclusive mortgage rates. Barclays, backing your future. Eligibility criteria apply. All mortgages are subject to application, financial circumstances and borrowing history. T's and C's apply. New Barclays mortgage applications only.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
When you're watching the match in bed, when you're streaming a game on your commute, when you just have to catch all the action.
Come on, come on.
Go! Oops, sorry.
Who cares? What's a spilt coffee after a goal like that?
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And a TV licence covers you to watch all TV channels, including live TV on streaming services, so you can cheer along no matter what time you're watching the football. Search TV licence together.
Okay, Laura, from the top.
When your nine-year-old is an unexpected tuba prodigy, and now you want to support her cheek-puffing talent, be a step ahead with Barclays Premier, with personalised financial planning and a dedicated advisor. Barclays, backing your future. Eligibility criteria apply. Investment products and services are provided by Barclays Bank PLC and its subsidiaries. Capital at risk.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
Up to speed.
Your Formula One podcast.
Round 10 is the iconic Spa circuit in Belgium.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday on YouTube or Global Player.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £24 million.
That's enough to get your hands in the air. Woo! Wow, you really don't care.
Get in tonight's draw. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. It could be you.
Estimated jackpot. Rules apply. 18 plus.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Getting ready for the big kickoff. Now, we gave you 10 things you never knew about the DR Congo and England won. We then gave you 10 things you never knew about Mexico and England won. So nervous, and why would you change with a winning formula? We decided to give you 10 things you never knew about Norway. Set to Aha's Take On Me. Aha. And as we take on them, let's listen to Take On Me. Number one, Norway has one of the world's longest coastlines, 62,000 miles. When measured in detail, it would circle the Earth more than twice. Some of the fjords are as deep as 4,300 feet. What does that mean? Imagine seven post office towers, or whatever, BT towers, put on top of each other. The midnight sun and the polar night carries around one-third of Norway as it's above the Arctic Circle. Number four, Norway inspired Disney's Frozen. Number five, per head of the nation, made more smoked salmon than any other country on the world, in the world. Number six, the Nobel Peace Prize is awarded in Oslo. Seven, Norway has the Europe's largest population of wild reindeer. Eight, Norway, again per head of the population, leads the world in sales of electric vehicles. Nine, the Vikings even were expert explorers and sailors. They went to the Faroe Islands, Greenland and Iceland. And lastly, Norway has the world's longest road tunnel, stretching some 15.2 miles. Take On Me, and we'll take on them, and we wish, obviously, England a great result. And can we count on it being a United Kingdom supporting us on? Or cheering us on, I should have said. LBC's Scotland correspondent Alan Zizinski went on the hunt to find an England fan in Glasgow. It's
certainly not a song that gets played very often here in Glasgow, but is it impossible to think that there is at least one Scot on these streets today that I can find that is backing England? Let's go and see. Who do you want win on Saturday?
Oh, I'm in Norway.
Tell me why.
I'm Scottish. That's all there is to it. I like all the England players, but can never support England as a team. Go on, Norway.
I'd like Norway to win it.
Aye, go for that to Norway as well,
aye. In a Mexico top before this one, were you?
Oh, aye. I like the Mexicans, to be fair.
I'm just trying to find one single person who does want England to win. Do you think I'm going to find any?
I don't think you find much, no.
I'd prefer Norway to win it. They've got quite close links to Scotland, so I'd like to see them do well, to be honest.
Any chance I could ask who you want to win the World Cup? Just kind of radio.
Anybody but England.
I think the question is, who do we not want to win it?
England!
And might that be England? Can I take a guess?
I think that might be a good guess.
I've never heard of the last of the first one.
Is there any way on this earth I could convince you to support England to win the World Cup?
No way.
No, I'm Welsh.
Do well enough supporting ourselves, didn't they?
So the search has gone from bad to worse, I'm afraid. Just come across this pub here, big sign outside that says Norwegian Supporters Club.
Norwegian Supporters Club, yeah.
Always been like that around here?
For about a couple of days. I think we were the Mexican Supporters Club. Before that, we were the Congolese Supporters Club. Before that, we were the Panamanian Supporters Club. And then before that, who was it?
Maybe
I can't remember. Icelandic Supporters Club. Yeah.
How are you feeling about the big game then? This must mean a lot to everyone here.
Yeah, it means a lot to us Norwegians.
And have you been practising your Viking row? I'm sure you might have seen it on the
side. I can give you one if you want.
I'll beat you in, will I, right?
Yeah,
you ready?
Go for it. 3, 2, 1.
Okay, so I finally found some people in Glasgow who are supporting England this weekend. I do get the sense, though, guys, you might not be local. Are you just visiting?
We are, yeah. We're here for a few days, yeah, so we've come up. But there's a bit of camaraderie between the British Isles, isn't there?
Any Scot will take joy if England do win the World Cup.
Will any Scot take joy if England win the World Cup?
Yeah.
I'll see you later, guys.
Alan Zizinski, unfortunately, fruitless reporting apart from those last two. Let's bring the conversation now. Rob Moore, who's Associate Features Editor for Sport at The Sun, joining me now. Rob, it's all about blocking Haaland, isn't it? And if anyone's got to stand a chance, it's got to be people who play him fairly regularly in the Premier League. Rob, morning.
Yeah, I love that segment you had there from the Scottish fans. It reminded me of Dennis Law in 66. He said he was playing golf when England were winning the World Cup at Wembley, the famous Scottish striker.
Yes.
Look, Erling Haaland has scored 7 World Cup goals in 4 matches. We saw that goals against Brazil. We've seen him in the Premier League. You've got to stop the supply if you're Thomas Tuchel. You've got to stop the ball getting to him. He's not exactly going to sprint to the line, but he will judge it perfectly. He will out-muscle a defender. He will score from set pieces. It is the most formidable task we've faced so far. Mexico was a tremendous result, wasn't it, Nick?
Yeah.
To go there to win with the altitude away from home. But in terms of an individual, this is the highest world-class player they've faced so far. If they beat Norway, they could play Messi. and then they could play Mbappe. So it's not getting any easier from the quarterfinal stage, is it, for England, who, aside from Mexico, aside from that second half against Croatia, have sort of laboured, really, haven't they?
Well, let's reference you, because I'm probably a bit more of a rugby bloke, and you'll remember a Rugby World Cup where England absolutely blitzed New Zealand, some of the best rugby I've ever seen, to get them into a final, and then I still don't think they've got off the bus to play South Africa. There's a danger about Mexico was their final, isn't there?
Well, also the travel. You've gone from Atlanta, Kansas to Mexico, then back again, then back to Mexico. Players on their last legs. Harry Kane is world class. He has really dragged his team. Andrew Bellingham. Can they do it for another three matches? You've got a patched up defence. You've got injuries in defence. Declan Rice is carrying an injury. And the heat, of course. It's going to be very hot and humid in Miami. So if England, of course, were to win, what an extraordinary tournament this has been for them to cope with all those conditions at the end of a long season. Bear in mind, of course, that Harry Kane, Jude Bellingham and Erling Haaland were playing in America last year in the Club World Cup for their clubs. So they've hardly had a break. So they've really gone into this World Cup. So it could be England falling over the line. However, do we look at extra time? Do we look at penalties? Does it feel like it's going to go that way again? Does it feel like it's going to feel like a Premier League match with the number of people that your listeners would have seen week in, week out for Arsenal, Man City or whatever? So it's going to be almost a familiar foe, isn't it?
Yeah.
But Haaland and Kane, who can outscore each other, I suppose, could be the one, couldn't it, this weekend?
Lastly, you're on the back page of The Sun. Lovely headline. Don't know whether you wrote it, possibly you didn't. Arthur Ferry has opt to conquer SW19. I love that headline. What's the op that Mr. Ferry has had, and what are his chances realistically later today at Wimbledon? Rob?
I can't take that headline.
I know. That's a good sub, a sports sub. Well done to them.
It is. He's getting nosebleeds. He was on centre court twice already. Before his first centre court appearance, he had a nose operation, cortisoned the nose to stop the nosebleeds. You don't want to bleed in front of the Queen Camilla, do you?
No.
So thankfully that happened. He's playing Alex Zverev, the number two. He's ranked 114 in the world. If he wins, if he becomes the first Englishman to win this title since Fred Perry 90 years ago, forget 60 years of football hurt, 90 years of English hurt at Wimbledon, he's got to beat Zverev and then beat Sinner and Djokovic. It would be hands down the greatest, you could argue, sporting story for England ever, considering the calibre of opposition he has to face.
Enjoy your afternoon out there at Wimbledon. Rob Moore is Associate Features Editor of Sport at The Sun. He's got a piece about Mr. Ferry's nose in the paper. You've got to love The Sun in the paper today. Finish with a call on vaping. Lisa in Norfolk, thank you for holding. You work in this field. How important is vaping, do you think? Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, indeed. I do. I am a tobacco dependency advisor.
Mm-hmm.
So we use vapes as a switch service to encourage people to come away from the use of tobacco. So that's what I do day in, day out.
How worried are you about the number of children who are taking it up?
I find it astonishing, actually. It's very interesting, isn't it? Because these are children that haven't been smokers, I don't think. These are children that are purely drawn to those brightly coloured packaging, exactly what you're talking about. So it's a real concern, isn't it? I mean, obviously...
Well, you work in this field. The government are consulting over this for 12 weeks. How would you respond? What would you tell them in return, Lisa?
Just do it. Just do it. Just get it. Just get on with it. I mean, obviously, vaping is very important for a tool to stop for stopping smoking, and I know people have said that previously. And if vapes are very well regulated in the UK, so if you're using a legitimate product, you're doing a massive benefit to your health by using that.
You had the last word. Lisa, thank you. Last word of the day, and indeed last word of the week. If you missed any of today's show, listen back on the free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. King Carl Turner is the other side of the news here on LBC, and I will see you in a week. Yes, I'm going to get away from the summer heat, if you'll excuse me, so I'll see you in a week or so's time. Meanwhile, have a safe weekend.
Thanks, Nick. You listen to me, Carl Turner, the MP for East Hull, standing in for James O'Brien until 1 o'clock. At 12, I want to talk to you about cohabiting couples and whether you think they should have the same rights as married people and civil partners. From 11, Nigel Farage. Do you think he regrets calling a by-election in Clacton? And how much trouble do you think reform are in? But first, Andy Burnham is about to become the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. This didn't happen because of the outcome of the general election. It was because of Keir Starmer's unpopularity and Andy Burnham's victory at the Makerfield by-election. My question this morning is, do you think Andy Burnham is going to be a better Prime Minister than Keir Starmer?
on your radio, on Global Player, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Spanish officials say they believe four British people could be among those killed in a large wildfire in the south of the country. At least 11 people are now known to have died in the southern province of Almeria. A sustained heatwave with temperatures of around 40 Celsius has led to wildfires across much of southern Europe in recent weeks. Sky's Europe correspondent Alistair Bunkle is following developments.
Most of those who died were caught trapped in their cars, and many others have been receiving medical treatment for suffering smoke inhalation. Spain, this is coming from the Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez, is going to deploy its largest ever firefighting force this summer in preparation for more wildfires.
Tributes are being paid to the former minister, MP and MEP, Anne Widdecombe, who's died at the age of 78. She was a leading figure on the right of British politics for decades and a staunch supporter of the UK's departure from the EU. Andy Burnham says he's deeply grateful to the 322 Labour MPs who have so far nominated him to be the party's next leader and Prime Minister. He's now only one short of the number of MPs needed to ensure that no one else can enter the contest. Figures obtained by LBC show the government has spent more than £2 million on social media personalities and content creators since coming to power. The Cabinet Office commissioned influencers to promote campaigns including free school breakfast clubs and the National Living Wage. The government says it has a duty to engage with the public and are continuously reviewing best value for money for taxpayers. There's more on this exclusive story on the LBC app. And vapes are to be put in plain packaging under new government plans to stop them being marketed to children. A 12-week consultation will now consider whether the devices can only be sold in white, black or grey. UK-wide proposals could also introduce restrictions on flavour descriptions. Hazel Cheeseman is from the group Action on Smoking and Health.
We have to remember those under the age of 18 who have tried vaping, most of that use is really quite experimental. So they're not using products very frequently and therefore there are more opportunities to dissuade them from continuing to use the products.
In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 2 points at 10,473. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.17. LBC weather, sunny and hot for most today. Spells of rain for the north of Scotland, a high of 35 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
British Gas annual boiler service. Right now it's got everyone raving because it will cost you just £79. That's a whopping £30 saving. So there's no better time for a checkup to make sure your boiler's fit and strong. But don't dilly-dally, don't hang around, because this offer won't last long. Search British Gas Boiler Service, taking care of things. £79 with membership, £89 without, versus £109 standard. First year new annual boiler service contract only. Ends 5th of August.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Carl Turner.
Good morning. You're listening to me, Carl Turner, standing in for James O'Brien on LBC until 1 o'clock today. At 12, I want to talk to you about cohabiting couples and whether you think they should have the same rights as married people and civil partners. At 11, I want you to tell me whether you think Nigel Farage regrets deciding to call a farcical by-election. I've got lots to say about that, and I want to hear from you too. But first, I want you to tell me whether you think Andy Burnham is going to be a better Prime Minister than Keir Starmer. But before we start, I just want to introduce myself to you, because I suspect a lot of you have never heard of me. I am Carl Turner, I'm the Labour MP for East Hull. I replaced John Prescott for the first time in 2010 at that general election. I was educated in East Hull. I was brought up on the biggest council estate in Europe. I left school at 16 without a qualification to my name, I have to tell you. I, for a short time, traded as an antiques dealer and became interested in law. Why did I become interested in law? Well, the reality was I got my collar fell. I was in bother with the police. I was accused of handling stolen goods and I was acquitted by a court, and that got me into law. I became a lawyer eventually, having done A-levels, and then on to Hull University and then to Northumbria University to study the bar course. And eventually, before the general election, having worked as a solicitor for some time, I was in the local chambers, Wilberforce Chambers in Hull. And that got to me the suspension point, because I have a real passion for criminal justice and indeed for the rule of law. And I thought the Labour Party had made a fatal mistake in contemplating this idea of doing away with jury trials in more than half of the serious criminal cases in the criminal justice system. That got me suspended from the Labour whip, and that's why I'm an independent MP. But, you know, every cloud has a silver lining, because without that, no doubt I wouldn't be here on LBC speaking to you and wanting to hear from you on the topics that are interesting to me, and I hope to you. So, I think we're going to go to the first. Yeah, so, look, what's my sort of relationship?